Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Sawubona. In Senegal, Nanga Def. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Viata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed, into the swing of things? Well, don't worry, you are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness/stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of Mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
And thank you so much for joining me this morning. Welcome to Monday Morning Mindfulness. I'm your host, Zelda Speaks. It is Monday, October 18th, and you know what that means? You woke up and saw a day, you saw light, that means you've got work to do. So you've been blessed with another day, and this is the day that you have been granted another opportunity to do something fabulous, to do something simply fabulous, to do something wonderful. I had a wonderful weekend. Was your weekend long enough? Mine wasn't. It never is. I don't care if you're working or not. It's just never long enough. Anyway, had a wonderful weekend this weekend. I'll tell you a little bit more about that. But first, happy Earth Day, birthday, born day. Excuse me, celebrating all the Libras. The month of October, October 13th, was my brother Patrick's birthday. I hope you got a chance to go to YouTube and see the video. Patrick's birthday, 1-18-19, I think it is. Anyway, but it's on my blog, zeldaspeaks.wordpress.com. Let us, so if you are celebrating a birthday today, we wish you happy birthday, born day to you and yours, and may you have a very special day and a very special week and a very special month and a very special life. Just celebrate it all month, all year. Why not? It's your birthday, so do what you want to do. Also, let us keep in mind the sick and the shut-in and those who have been affected by the pandemic, and just know that God is in control. The Creator is in control. So you need not be fearful about anything. Congratulations to our very own Chicago Sky basketball team. Ladies basketball team, they won the championship. Yay! NBA championship. So you know they're going to tear up Chicago. Well, they didn't already tear it up. I haven't been out this morning, so I really couldn't tell you. And I am honored to be a part of helping people go to see the Chicago Sky. We often, at the Higher Learning Network, go to YouTube right now and sign on so you can get tickets to Higher Learning TV Show. That's our YouTube channel, Higher Learning TV Show. And you see that logo, because there's a lot of Higher Learnings, but there's only one Higher Learning Network, NFP. And when you see that logo, that three-color logo, HLN, green, orange, and purple, you know you have the right one. Anyway, so if you ever want free tickets, you can always just email me, hlntvshow@gmail.com. That's for the tickets. Otherwise, you can always go to the website, higherlearningnetwork.org. But so congratulations. They have won the championship. Yay. Who said girls couldn't do it? Girls rock. You need to know. All right. Understand that. If you're listening online, thank you so much for joining us this morning. If you'd like to join the conversation, 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak. We're on Facebook.com, Zelda Speaks, and the, HLNTV1. It's HLNTV1. And, of course, my Instagram page, Zelda Speaks, the number 2, the letter U. And I do believe that, I've got 2, Zelda Speaks, the number 2, and M-E, but it goes to both, so it does that. And be sure and check out my blog. That's where I post all the updates, zeldaspeaks.wordpress.com. And remember, when you're setting the TV station to record your programs, if you can't always watch our shows, you can always watch them on our YouTube channel, which is, I just told you, Higher Learning TV Show, which airs Tuesdays at 6, Wednesdays at 1 on Channel 19. And be sure and download the Higher Learning Network app. See that HLN? Yeah, that's it. That way you can keep it up on your phone. You'll be kept in the know on the phone. And also, many know my plight, the challenge with sugar, food. So I became a diabetic, and I reversed type 2 diabetes, and not everyone can do that. So if you're one of the people who are willing to do that, you can do that by going to diabeticdonut.com. And you can download the free app that says how do I reverse type 2 diabetes. And it's free, so be sure to share that with someone. And if your grocery bills are too high, you'll know why. When Greg, attorney Greg, Francis Greg, comes on this morning with talking about the largest civil rights settlement ever, $1.25 billion. Ooh, baby, yeah, so we want to talk to him about that. It's 7:10. Let's check in with your weather and traffic report. Sponsored by Karen Kelly of itex.com. If you are looking to go out today, it's still, it's sunny, it looks good, but it's a little chilly. This is October, and it is Chicago, so expect the unexpected. Up to 70 degrees today. It's like 62 right now, but it'll be 70 today. High in the 71, 72 somewhere. Who cares? It's 70. It's a good day. Down to the 50s tonight. As we take a look at the CTA and Metra, there are no delays. Inbound on the Kennedy, that's a whole other story. It is 45 minutes inbound. Slow at Lawrence Avenue if you're traveling to O'Hare. It's only 30 minutes on the outbound. Inbound on the Eaton's Lake Cook to the Junction is 24. And on the inbound, 21 on the outbound. On the Eisenhower, there's an accident at First Avenue. It's 50 minutes inbound. And 29 minutes on the outbound, so expect delays. On the Stevenson inbound, 29-21 on the reverse. That earlier accident has been cleared up on the Stevenson. On the Ryan inbound, it's 19 in and 15 out. On the Bishop Ford, it's 16 minutes in, 13 minutes on the reverse side. And on DuSable Drive, Lakeshore Drive, DuSable / Lakeshore Drive, it's 11 minutes in both directions. And if you know anything about Lakeshore Drive, you know I talked about it last week. My brother, Patrick Bradley, is the, he wasn't the engineer. What is he? Oh, he's the draftsman. He was the electrical draftsman. He drew up the plans to reverse the S-curve in Lakeshore Drive. Black history you knew nothing about. But now you know. So remember that when you're driving down Lakeshore Drive. Patrick Bradley, my big brother, Patrick Bradley, is the electrical engineer who reversed the S in Lakeshore Drive. He did the S and I do the Z. Okay, all right. All right, this traffic and weather sponsored by Karen Kelly of iTech.com. If you're looking to go to Caribbean, Jamaica, Alaska, Hawaii, Mexico, doesn't matter. You can travel. You can use their travel services, everything. And it's free. And you get $100 to sign up when you sign up and use my name. Excuse me, Zelda. Zelda, giving thanks to the ancestors. And that way, you can travel and do whatever else it is that you need to do. As we move to our word for the day, inspirational conversations with Shalom with Israel, taken from volume 1. And I'm reading from October 18th. And we're talking about, this is a whole series, it's like a whole week long, but in this page we're talking about October 18th. And the book that I'm referring to in this book is Charles Roth, The 12 Powers of Man. And it talks about the 12 powers, so I'm on page October 18th and talking about we're on the sixth power today, and it says, your sixth power is located between the eyes, which are illustrated by the disciple of Bartholomew. Bartholomew symbolizes the faculty of imagination, which has been referred to as the scissors of the mind, or language of pictures. Surely you can remember closing your eyes and seeing a picture of something that's not really there in the physical. This is the process of creative visualization that we use on a daily basis without being consciously aware of it. Unbeknownst to us, we use our imagination when we worry or think the worst about a person or a situation. We have the power in our bodies in between the eyes to shape our reality right here. Have you shaped your reality? What does it look like? Do you like what you see? It's never too late. So close your eyes and change your view. Inspirational Conversations with Shalom and Israel, a.k.a. Zelda Speaks, available at ZeldaSpeaks.com. And the proceeds benefit our Global Virtual Teen Talent Contest, which airs the fourth Saturday of every month. This is something that we do to encourage our children to continue the process of tapping into their own natural gifts, talents, and abilities. And we are simply fascinated by the amount of talent auditions that these children send us from all over the world. Our winner for the month of September was a young man by the name of Mark Tiford. Mark Tiford is from Bulgaria. and he did, go back, you can see it on our YouTube channel, Higher Learning TV Show, and you'll see all the contestants there. So if you have youth between the age, or you know of youth between the age of 13 and 19, they can sing, dance, write poetry, act. We had a yo-yo championship. We had a Afro dancer. You ever heard of Afro dancer? No, I did modern dance as a kid. I never heard of Afro dancer, but she was fantastic. Never seen anything like that in my life. But so just, we just have all kinds of talent. So let's continue to encourage our children. Have them send a one-minute audition, a video clip, a YouTube video clip. If they don't have a page on YouTube, go to YouTube and make them a page. Have them make a page. They probably already know because they teach me everything. I have them send that one-minute video clip to hlntvshow@gmail.com. Send us the link from your YouTube channel. And also, if they have, if they want to send another video in with, 5, 10 seconds, 15 seconds on what their name is, their age, what city they live in, and their hobbies, what they like to do. And we'll include them in the next show because we're always looking for talent. That is our purpose. That is our mission, to help our children help themselves, because if we don't help them, who will? The streets will. And there's nothing in the streets but waiting for you, but a jail cell or the grave. So we have the option to support Teen Talent Contest, and you can support them. We offer them prizes and cash, and you can help us by helping them by cash apping Zelda Speaks, and also our PayPal address, which is higherlearningnw@yahoo.com. And our proceeds benefit the Youth Media Training Program, and that's exactly what we do. We teach them behind-the-scenes radio, television, print production in the studio. But, right about now, the studio is an issue, so this is what we're doing, and we hope you will support our youth in doing so. And speaking of youth is a state of mind. You know that, right? This past weekend, I had the privilege and pleasure of attending a photo shoot with my dear friend Rhonda Thomas of ronsway.com. She had a photo shoot for women over 50. We had so much fun. Oh, my goodness. We had a party in the middle of the day. And so the calendar will be coming out 2022. And it was for women over 50. I met some awesome sisters. I met a sister who makes these unique, divine, one-of-a-kind dolls. And I was like, wow, where were these kinds of dolls when I was a kid coming up? They didn't exist. We didn't even have black dolls. And they are simply fabulous. And I told her, I said, these are museum-quality dolls. So we're working on that, on having her as a guest on the show. She's just traveling all over the place. So we've scheduled her for November, and I'll keep you posted on that. But these dolls are fabulous. You have to see them. Then I just met all kind of women, but the dolls just really freaked me out, because when an object, an inanimate object, speaks to you, and it's like, I've got to have her on the show. We got a whole lot of things playing around that, but I will tell you a little bit more as time progresses. Right about now, it's time for your Monday morning mindfulness meditation. And you know what that means? We're going to do some breathing exercises this morning so we can make you feel good when you're stressed out, when people are getting on your last nerve, and you want to slap them. You can do better than that. You can freeze on them. How about that? So let's sit up straight in the chair, feet flat on the floor, and we're just going to simply inhale and exhale. That's all we're doing. Inhale and exhale. Okay? And we'll count to... just inhale. You don't have to count. Just inhale. Hold it. And exhale. All right? So, close your eyes. Picture your body in a place that just makes you feel good. I see myself sitting on an island in Jamaica somewhere with a pina colada, a virgin rum drink of some kind, and somebody fanning me, and it's just hot, and the sun is beaming down, and I'm just, just enjoying myself as I breathe in. Hold it. And exhale. Felt that relaxation immediately, didn't you? Yeah, that's what happens when you breathe deep. When you breathe deep, it expands the lungs and it triggers the receptors in the brain, particularly the happiness gene, okay? So, let us breathe in through his nose, inhale deeply, hold it, and exhale. Oh, that feels good, just to let the body know that you're in a good space this morning. Inhale deeply, and exhale. Remember, we're breathing through the nose. That's how we can get that deep relaxation in the shoulders and the mind and the body and the spirit. Take these two fingers and this thumb, put them in the back of the neck. Squeeze the back of the neck. That's where that vagus nerve is. Stimulate your immune system. Oh, you didn't know that, did you? Mm-hmm. Stimulate that immune system as we continue to breathe in and breathe out. You can do this anytime you're feeling yourself a little stressed. Take those fingers and rub the back of the shoulders. Yeah, just rub those shoulders. Breathing in. Hold it. And breathing out. Rub those shoulders and stretch those arms. Yes. Long, deep stretch. Oh, that feels good. Oh, and inhale deeply. Hold it. And exhale. Just relax the body. Let's take one more long, deep inhale together. Inhale. Bringing that breath all the way up in the head, the top of the head. And as we exhale, feeling the breath come down through the face and down through the shoulders. As we inhale once more, inhale deeply. And as we exhale, bringing the breath down through the arms and the wrist, elbows, and wiggle those fingers and those wrists. Oh, and wiggle those shoulders, rotate them. Yeah, front, back, and then reverse it. Oh, yeah, just get the body moving, because, you know, we sit a lot. And then we have to do the higher learning hip roll. Get that body moving as we inhale deeply. Bringing the energy of the breath down through the chest, the stomach, the sides, the back, the hip, the buttocks, and the thighs as we inhale deeply. Bringing more breath down through the knees. Yes, rub those beautiful knees and the legs and the ankles. Feel free to wiggle those toes as we inhale. Continue breathing in and breathing out. Bringing in the breath of life, giving thanks for the power of the breath as we wiggle those toes. Giving thanks for the energy that is moving throughout the feet, back up through the ankles and the arches and the legs. And the knees, as we rub on those knees and those legs and those thighs and those hips, giving thanks as we breathe in and as we breathe out. We give thanks for the energy that flows back up through our sides as we breathe in, bringing that energy back up through our back and our shoulders and our arms as we open them up and stretch them out. And we stretch and stretch and stretch as we breathe in and as we breathe out, giving thanks for the power of the breath. As we breathe in once more, sending the breath all the way back up through the neck, shoulders, and the head, and bringing that energy back up to the top of the forehead as we breathe in. And as we breathe out, bringing the head down, chin to chest, and slowly rotating the head to the left. And slowly bringing it around to the back, slowly, slowly, slowly bringing it around to the right. And slowly bringing it back around to the front. Head up, inhale deeply. And as we exhale, bring the forehead back down, chin to chest. And slowly rotate the head to the right. Slowly, slowly, slowly around to the back. Slow down. You're moving too fast. And slowly bring it around to the left. And bring it back around to the front. Head up. Inhale deeply. And as you exhale, look to the left as far as you possibly can, feeling a stretch. Ah, yes, that feels good. Just hold that stretch and breathe in. And exhale, bringing the head back front center. Inhale deeply. turning the head to the right as far as you possibly can, feeling the stretch in the left side of the neck. Oh, does that feel good or what? And slowly bringing that head back around. Oh, and as I look back around, I see the lovely face of attorney Greg Francis. And as we end this session this morning, we inhale deeply. And exhale. Giving thanks for the power of the breath, because it is the breath that keeps us here. And I do not want to delay this any longer, but let me leave you with this. This is something that you can practice on your own. When you are in the midst of chaos, in the midst of madness, and people are getting on your last nerve and don't know the flavor of your Kool-Aid, you simply breathe in, and you simply breathe out. And if you got a little funk on your breath, like a little garlic or onions, you forgot to brush your teeth, good thing. Breathe through your nose. Blow it in their face, and I promise you that they will back up, because who wants to smell bad breath? And while you're doing it, remember to share it, because these are very stressful times, and people are very stressed out, and deep breathing will calm the body. It triggers the brain receptors for you to be in a good space. So share that. And please go to my YouTube page, Zelda Speaks Mindfulness, and you'll see more of this there. And in the meantime, in between time, it is 7:26, and I said he's not coming on to 7:30, but he's here right now. So let's welcome him to the conversation. Good morning, Greg. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Zelda. I'm very relaxed now. Thank you.
Wonderful. I'm so glad to hear that. This is the young man who is responsible for not your groceries being so high, but helping black farmers. I have been keeping up with this. I have got to tell you. Let me just tell you a little bit about this man. Attorney Greg Francis is the young man who won the, let me be sure I got this right, $1.25 billion. Is that correct?
That's correct.
For black farmers. It's the largest civil rights settlement ever. Did you hear what I said? Ever. And he is a champion for the rights of black Americans, led and won the largest civil rights settlement in the history of civil justice in the U.S., demanding justice for the 33,000 black farmers, and it was a settlement unknown to others. It has never been done. So kudos. Thank you so very much, because I have been following black farmers. I come from a family of farmers. I was a farmer as a kid living on my aunt's farm. Said, I know the struggle, so I know what you went through. How did that come to be? Did you live on a farm as a kid? How did that come to be?
No, you know, Zelda, I'm actually from Panama, originally in Central America.
Really?
I grew up in Orlando, Florida, so I knew nothing about the plight of black farmers as a child growing up, or even as a college student, for that matter. I was working with a law firm at the time. We opened an office in Mississippi. I happened to be working with Mike Espy, who you know is the first African-American secretary of agriculture, and who really got this case started. And I started hearing the stories of the black farmers and what they had been through. And, you know, probably not unlike your family, some of the stories are, you know, true atrocities to real Americans. Initially, I didn't believe it. Mm. I said, there's no way this could still be going on in America.
Yeah.
You know, that there's no way that this can be, that black farmers can be systemically discriminated against, but, you know, after hearing a number of the stories and beginning to do some research, I was convicted, and when you look at the numbers, I mean, it's very readily obvious, you know, what has happened to black farmers.
That is, you know, you hit the nail on the head when you said, I can't believe at this point in time in history that this is still going on.
Right, right. It was just amazing to me. Like I said, it was shocking to me because I thought, you know, how can we as Americans and live in such a progressive society and such a powerful nation oppress a certain group of people like they have black farmers, especially when these farmers were contributing very, very greatly to not only the development of agriculture in the United States historically, but, you know, in the 1920s, there was probably about 960,000 black farmers. Providing, which is 15% of all farmers, but we're providing 30% of the food supply at the time. And to have that just wiped out over the years because of the lack of funding the discriminatory treatment of the farmers that would deny them funding was something that had to be addressed.
I am so glad, and it's, I almost want to say, it's good that you did not come from a farming background because you saw, you were outside looking in.
Right, 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 right. I approached the case with some skepticism.
Yes.
To see whether, oh, is this, you know, a few farmers who may have not, maybe they didn't really qualify, or maybe they didn't have the right, you know, credentials, or, you know, everyone's not a successful farmer. So I came with a bit of skepticism, but... it didn't take very long after you hear the story over and over and over again. And, you know, even you look at the USDA and what they have done in terms of investigations regarding the plight of black farmers and their involvement with black farmers. Like I said, the evidence was very, very relevant and very prevalent there.
What was your biggest challenge during this case? Was it bringing it? Was it gathering the farmers? Because, you know, they say black folks don't stick together. Was that a problem, getting all the farmers together?
No, because we had been certified by the court as a class action, so getting the farmers together was not necessarily the issue. But communicating with the farmers was. You know, as you know, Zelda, from being out in the rural parts of America, there's not, you know, broadband and internet or... email at that time. So just that communication, and you know, farmers work all day, so it's not like they watch TV.
Right.
And, you know, I try to keep up on anything. So I developed, I thought to myself, after talking to many farmers and listening to kind of their daily work routine, that, you know, most farmers will come home and time enough to hear the evening news.
Mm.
Or someone in the family will hear the evening news and pass along the information. So I embarked on a journey, I call it, my journey to justice, by going all across the South to small towns and doing interviews with local radio stations and having press conferences with local radio and TV stations in order to ensure that the word got out.
Okay. You know, that is the history of our people, is that is how you connect with us,
right,
with radio.
Right,
and
I've
been doing a little research, and I discovered that my background is in radio. I worked in secular radio before I started podcasting, because, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but in corporate America, once you get of a certain age, they're going in a new direction, and you're not included in that direction.
I'm very familiar with
it. So you have to be abreast of things. We can continue this conversation, but we got to take a quick commercial break. And for those who want to join the conversation this morning, you can join us at 515-605-9325, press 1 to speak, and you stay close and we'll be right.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the Earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
Hi, I'm Jody Susan with Susan Essentials. I started Susan Essentials in 2015 because of a personal health journey. I was over-medicated and put on 19 different medications. And yes, I reversed all my chronic diseases using plant and energy-based healing. It was amazing. At Susan Essentials, we support both consumers and businesses, and we do that with helping your employees or yourself with a food as medicine mindset. How Susan Essentials supports businesses and consumers is we teach people about a food as medicine mindset. So we support people on how to support their own immune system, how to support their brain health, how to support their emotional well-being, and we do that all with plant and an energy-based healing.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
I am joined by the one and only attorney author, Greg Francis, who won the $1.25 billion for Black Panther. Bold enough and bad enough to do the work that was necessary. I know that was a challenge. And I know you said that your communication with them was the biggest challenge. I got to ask you this crazy question. Do you watch or did you ever watch Queen Sugar?
I watched a couple episodes of it. I haven't watched all of it, but what I saw was very similar to what's going on actually in Black agriculture.
I was wondering, after looking at an episode of that, I said, wow, how can that be? How they use us as people to turn against each other, knowing that this is going to help us as a community. What kind of, because it was a class action suit, what kind of obstacles did you come across in the initial beginning of this process of filing a class action lawsuit?
Well, when my particular law firm got involved in the case, there were other lawyers already working on the case.
Oh, really?
That had been involved in the case, and they had the farmer sign an agreement that was the standard contingency free agreement that a personal injury lawyer would have them sign of getting almost a third of the recovery, if there was a recovery. But with taking the bold position that no, this should be a class action, and leaving it up to the judge in order to find out what our fees would be and how we would be paid, if we would be paid, what we'd be paid, when we'd be paid, was a challenge amongst the lawyers. All the other law firms didn't agree to it. Obviously, they did not file the class action. Zelda, I was working for a larger firm at the time. I now have I'm in a new firm, but that larger firm, not every one of my partners believed in this case. So many times I'd be negotiating with the government. I may be negotiating with the other lawyers, and I'd come back to my office, and I had to kind of negotiate and give them an update and encouragement to allow me to continue on this case.
What did that do to you personally? What did that do to your spirit?
It made me inwardly on those things that I've been taught as a child about being honest and doing good and sticking to things. You know, coming, like as I say, coming to America here from Panama, you know, we didn't know anyone here. But every step along the way, there were always folks who were not necessarily family, who would assist me, would guide me, would encourage me along the way. And as a result of that, I just kind of developed a sense of always wanting to fight for the underdog.
What was the one thing that stood out in your mind in the course of this whole experience that made you say, made you, or if this occurred to you, is this really worth it?
You know, as I said, I was questioning it initially, is it really worth it? But, you know, I was sitting in the office one day in Jackson, Mississippi, and I got a call from it was actually two brothers on the phone. One was in Texas, one was in Oklahoma. And I said, well, you know, I'll listen to their, you know, to their story. Let me see what they have to say, whether this is consistent with some of the other bits and pieces of stories I heard before. And 5 minutes into the conversation, they said, no, you're going to talk to us. We want to come and see you. I said, well, I'm not, you know, I live in Orlando. I just happen to be in Mississippi for, you know, for 3 or 4 more days. They said, we'll be there tomorrow. And those gentlemen drove from Oklahoma and from Texas, you know, 12 hours one way, 9 hours the other brother, in order to tell me this story. And I knew anyone that was that serious about the fight, that there had to really be something there.
It had to be. And now this is a question, because I watch court TV, as a lot of people do.
Right.
And you hear the stories about how people win settlements, but they never collect.
Right, right.
How was that being handled?
This was the United States of America as a defendant.
Uh-huh.
There was no question about how much money that was available.
Uh-huh.
But that really was another part of the process. After the legal maneuvering and whatnot and coming to a resolution, we had a settlement amount. However, this had to be approved by Congress. This had to be approved by the U.S. Senate. And there were those who were detractors within Congress that, you know, that fight wasn't quite as hard, I would say, because the Congressional Black Caucus stepped in and really showed out on behalf of Black farmers. But when we got to the Senate, you know, the Senate has all these intricate rules, many of which I still don't understand, where one person can object to even having something heard, and that was consistently being done by one or two senators throughout the process, and wouldn't even let it come up for a vote. So it was a very contentious time. There was going to be a new election. We didn't know whether, you know, the Democrats were going to keep the majority in the Senate. And fortunately, they did, and during the lame duck session, which, again, this is all news to me, I thought lame duck meant they don't do anything, but actually get a lot of business done during that time. We were able to get the approval of the Senate in order to continue the process. But again, you know, there's settlement, and any good lawyer will tell you there's a settlement, and then there's a process of collecting the funds. So it's not, you know, wasn't something that was immediate. After we had now been granted these funds, we had to develop a claims process to hire folks to go out and actually help the farmers across America. I went to hundreds of meetings, met, you know, probably thousands of farmers over the months in the probably year process. And then once those claims were all in, we had to make sure they were in, they were signed, were sufficient, and then there was a process of waiting for the neutrals to determine who would, in fact, receive some compensation.
You call the neutrals.
The neutrals. And the neutrals were, you know, there are groups out there that many of which are former judges who have kind of a process for something like this, like a class action. But, you know, let me just say this, Zelda. $1.25 billion is what gets your attention.
Yes.
For this case, for sure. But I'm going to tell you what was most important to these farmers. They just wanted to be heard.
Thank you.
They just wanted to be heard. You know, there are countless stories of folks coming in. There's an older gentleman in Oklahoma that I saw waiting in line. I decided to bring him in and process the claim myself. His daughter pushed him in a wheelchair. We sat down, and as we began the process, I asked her his name, and she told me. I said the address, and she told me. By the time I asked the third question, she said, hold on. My daddy's here to speak for himself.
Okay.
And this older gentleman did. That's, in fact, exactly what he did. He told me about, you know, his time, you know, fighting for this country in World War II and coming back here and facing the challenges that he faced and the discrimination that he faced. And that he was happy to be heard, that someone was finally listening and going to pay attention and potentially address what had been going on.
Almost sounds like they needed to have a listening party.
Right, exactly. And you know, the other important part of, again, you know, 1.25 is a lot of money. They wanted to be heard. But also what's important now with regard to this book, you know, I was able to represent the farmers and give them a voice in the courtroom. But I want to give them a voice out in America, in the general public, because many people don't know about the plight of black farmers. You
sure
know,
don't.
Zelda, if your family has been in America for long enough, more likely than not, you have some connection to farming. When the slaves came here, the only carry-on baggage they had was their knowledge of farming.
Mm-hmm.
And it transformed America into great power.
Yes.
With cotton and all the other, and peanuts and all the other crops. But once they were freed by the Emancipation Proclamation, which I tell people all the time, there was a change of legislation, but there wasn't a change of heart.
USDA
was created, but it now is being implemented by those same people who had just previously enslaved or supported the slavery system. There was no way, you know, that the human nature was not just like, okay, well, we have a new law, we're going to switch our thinking. In fact, and that's what led to, you know, kind of the systemic discrimination. It's not that the process, once you get into it, is discriminatory, but it's those gatekeepers at the very front end who may throw away the application of the black farmer who comes in, at times will tell them blatantly, look, you are inward and you're not going to get that kind of money. Or give them the runaround, go to different offices in order to make your claim. Because, you know, in farming, timing is everything. If you don't plant the crop by a certain time, you're not going to reap the harvest in the end. So, you know, even a month delay in getting the funds to the farmers can be very significant.
Yeah, I witnessed that. I saw that. As a kid, as a child, we never had a late crop. That just didn't exist, because if you don't plant, you don't eat. And if you don't plant on time, you definitely won't eat. You mentioned...
Right. You know, Zelda, speaking of that, and you're kind of your family situation, and, you know, that's one of the things that the lawsuit did not necessarily address, but that we really lost as a race is that familial bond that you have as farmers. And you said, if you don't work, you don't eat. There's a work ethic that is created amongst the parents and the family and the kind of the connectiveness of the family as a result of being involved in this process all together. And that has been, you know, taken away from us. That has been ripped away from us because many of the children of the farmers would move away or go to college, and they weren't coming back to that farm where they were discriminated against. They were going on to try to do something different. And then lastly, you know, the generational wealth that is lost as a result of not being able to pass that farm on to the next generation, either because the children have moved on and doing something else, or because it's in so much debt that the USDA wouldn't release, that they would ultimately lose the farm.
And lots of farms have been lost.
Yes.
Unsurmountable amount of farms have been lost. And it's like, how... in this day and age, is this still happening? Why is it still happening? With all the knowledge and information that we have, why are we still on the bottom? And you said something very important. You said, you can change the legislation, but if you don't change the heart of man, nothing's going to happen.
Right. Right, exactly. You know, the change of legislation is just the beginning of the process.
Yes.
You got to really, really, really change their heart.
And that's one of the things that we focus on here on the Female Solution, is to give people a broader perspective of themselves, and for those who don't believe in what we believe in, but just to allow them the opportunity to open their third eye and perhaps get a glimpse of what reality is like for us. And maybe at some point in their lives they will have a change of heart. We didn't see what's coming. We thought this would never happen, what we're going through right now, but it's here, and it's happening. So anything is possible. You mentioned a book.
Zelda, I wrote a book. Just Harvest is a book that I wrote detailing the Black Farmer case and my involvement with it. It tells the stories of several farmers, what they've been through, and kind of takes you through the process of getting to a point where there is a settlement. It's available on Amazon. As well as Target, or Tarjay, I'm told.
Yes. it's called Tarjay, like Neiman Marcus' needless markup.
Right.
And that was Just Harvest, did you say?
Yes, Just Harvest.
I'm putting that in there, looking forward right now. And why did you write this book?
I wrote the book for awareness. Again, like I said, I've given the farmers a voice in the courtroom and been successful at that, but I wanted to give them a voice out in the general public. Because, again, they, just like I didn't know about this story, I can't tell you many of the interviews I go through. I haven't been on an interview about this book where someone has said, oh, yeah, I remember this. Everyone, this is new information to them. And this awareness is important, I think, for the plight of Black farmers, because it changes the perspective. You know, we wouldn't have had the kind of social reckoning that we had with regard to George Floyd if we didn't see it.
Yes. You hit the
nail. You couldn't actually lay your eyes on it. If someone just told you, look, he held his knee in his back for, you know, 9 minutes, you would have said, no, come on. You know, it may have felt like 9 minutes, but it wasn't really 9 minutes. When you see it was actually 9 minutes, and it, you know, it changes your perspective.
Yes,
well, the same thing, you know, with Black farmers, and the reason I wrote the book is I think there needs to be an awareness so that this does not happen again and doesn't continue to happen. Unfortunately, you know, if you look back at the previous administration, for those 4 years, billions of dollars were handed out in subsidies to farmers.
Yes, I saw that. I was like, okay, so when we gonna get ours? I'm sorry. I was emotional.
One tenth of 1%.
That's an insult.
Black farmers.
That's an insult.
It is an insult. It is an insult. And, you know, this current administration attempted to address this again by setting aside $5 billion for farmers for debt relief. However, that has been held up right now, believe it or not, because of a lawsuit from several white farmers who said that's discriminatory against them.
Oh, my goodness. Are you serious? They always try to reverse things.
Right, right, right. It's good, as they say, you know, ain't no fun when a rabbit got guns.
I know, that's right.
They don't want it when a turnabout is fair play.
Oh, no.
They don't appreciate that.
They don't deal with that. I just Googled your book. Please tell me I have the right cover.
That is the right cover. That's the book.
Just Harvest, the story of how Black farmers won the largest U.S. settlement in history. But I see they call you Greg. Is that Gregorio?
Yeah, Gregorio.
Gregorio. Well, now that's a fascinating name. How did that name come about?
Again, you know, my family came from the islands in the Caribbean to Panama to build the Panama Canal.
Ooh.
You know, again, this was another example, and I talk about some of this in the book as well. You know, my background and the Panama Canal and how that is kind of just a prelude to exactly what the Black farmers have been through and are going through. Blacks were brought in from the different islands, in particular my family from Barbados, to help build the canal because the white Americans who had been sent down there could not survive in the conditions, in the living conditions. It was very dangerous work in addition to a number of different diseases. So they started, the American government started paying Barbados, Jamaica, all these different countries to send able-bodied men to work in building the canal. During that process, you know, they were given the most dangerous jobs in terms of the dynamite. There were lives lost, limbs lost, lives were maimed. And they were paid in silver, but if you were white, you were paid in gold. So this you know, it was just kind of a continuation of what was really going on in America that was going on in Panama. But nevertheless, Panama is a Spanish-speaking country, and you know, Gregorio is Gregory in Spanish.
Okay. Wow. We've got a few comments here. I have shared the Media Connection TV. That is the Naima Latif is our executive producer of
right.
the show, and she has an organization called the Media Connection TV. And she says, I have shared this show with everyone I know with farmland they have inherited. How do we get today's urban descendants interested in farming? Excellent question, Naima.
Because
farming is hard work.
Farming is hard work, but you know, I think it's important to teach young African-American children or you know, teenagers that, you know, farming is hard work, but there's the business of agriculture, really. And it's not just about these days farming and, you know, planting seeds, but, you know, there's hydroponic farming. There's, you know, all types of farming that's done inside now. That's not still hard work. But in addition to it, there is a whole business of getting the crops from the farms to the places of distribution, and that there's really a disconnect in America in terms of getting that produce into the stores or the farmers markets and that kind of thing. So I think there are a number of different areas that, you know, I think young urban descendants can be involved in, and I think it's a matter of education. You know, my kids don't think, unfortunately, and you know, I was involved in the case. My kids don't think about where that apple comes from that they're eating.
Oh no,
they think it comes from Publix.
Right.
They don't understand that there's a process, and there are folks who make a living and live in rural areas in order to provide food for us.
I'm so glad you said that, because our executive producer, Naima Latif, who just wrote that comment, last year we had an experience that she taught us how to go right outside in your yard, if you
right.
fortunate enough to live in a home, and there are weeds growing. And many of those weeds that are growing are dandelion. Dandelion is the cure-all for everything.
Right.
I know, because I reversed type 2 diabetes drinking dandelion juice, dandelion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if I can do it, anybody can do it. So be
right.
sure and go to diabeticdonut.com. But I'm going to put that up there shortly. But I have ZeldaRobinsonTowerGarden.com because I live in an apartment in the city. I don't have the luxury of having a garden, so I have what's called a tower garden.
Right.
And people always ask me, because I juice, that's how I reverse type 2 diabetes, by juicing. And I don't have the luxury of going outside, pulling up the
right,
dandelion,
right.
but I can do it at home in my own apartment. And it's work.
Right.
But the rewards, it's like, wow, I did this with my hands and with my knowledge.
Right.
I can grow my own food. And you wonder why your groceries so high. They're going to get even higher.
Right, exactly. And Zella, as you said, you know, there is something that is learned, and there's something that gives you a sense of self-worth when you take this seed and plant it in the ground or in a tower, like you indicated, and it produces, that seed looks nothing like the crop that you're going to reap.
Nope.
But to see that and plant it in the ground or plant it in a tower or do it hydroponically and see it blossom into something else, there's a type of personal satisfaction.
Yes.
That is gotten by the farmer.
You can't buy it.
Right.
You can only feel it. You can only experience it. And it is so fulfilling. You know, we go shopping to get fulfilled. We drink, we eat, we gamble, we have sex, we do all these other things. But there is nothing like the power of knowing that you use your mind and your hands to feed yourself. How powerful is that? Because the food that you're growing, it doesn't have pesticides. And pesticides is one of the reasons why we're having so many health issues, because all of this fake stuff that's in our food, and it's killing. Roundup. You know, they knew Roundup was garbage.
Right.
But they didn't care. It was all about profit. We're going to come back and continue that note, but right now it's 8 o'clock. We're talking with the attorney, Greg Francis, who won the largest U.S. settlement ever. Now, let's see if we can collect on that, but we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Stay close.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Dr. CJ of Valona Health, where we combine orthopedic manual therapy and neuroscience to treat the whole person. Health tip for the day is keep it moving. Doesn't matter how, just keep it moving doing something you enjoy. Walking, dancing, rolling on the floor with your dogs or kids, really anything. The body craves movement to keep the bones, joints, and muscles happy. Even our mental health and internal organs and digestive system rely on our movements. Thanks for being a part of the Higher Learning Network on the Female Solution.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed, into the swing of things? Well, don't worry, you are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness / stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
Oh, man. God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456. And schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
Joined by the attorney Greg Francis, who won the largest U.S. settlement ever for black farmers. That alone, my people, needs a round of applause. So let's give it. Press 1 to speak. I got so many questions. It's like they're just bubbling
over. Okay, that's fine.
Did that cause you, did I say that too fast? Yes, I did. 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak. And you can also post on our Facebook page, HLNTV1 and Zelda Speaks. We have a comment. Those who left the South decades ago made their children hate farming because they connected it to being poor and uneducated. How we reverse those conscious concepts black people have of farming? Ooh, Naima Latif, the Media Connection TV. Wow, that's a great question.
I think it is a great question, and I think it, you know, if you go all the way back, it goes back to actual manual labor, and equating manual labor with being poor or being uneducated, you know, made up, obviously, the initial slaves that were free weren't educated because they weren't allowed to be educated, so we've been playing catch-up the entire time, but I think it's important now to, in reversing that trend, to look back on those think about as far as how that familial bond has grown and become stronger because of the working together out and on the farm. That's important. The potential for generational wealth of passing the farm on to the next generation, and how that can change, you know, the entire family and the trajectory of the family.
Mm.
But lastly, also the importance of agriculture. Period. You know, it is not. You know, just as times have progressed, agriculture has progressed. Whether it is actual farming, whether it is the commodities that are associated with the trading of the farming, the getting it to the market, growing different types of crops. I think all those things are important in assisting and letting the general public and certainly, you know, those who left the farms many years ago, let them know that this was, or that some of the difficulties they had was as a result of the discrimination in terms of getting funding for the farms, and that now, you know, there's at least an attempt. I'm not going to say it's been completely successful, but an attempt to address that and to ensure that that doesn't continue happening.
Mm. I am so glad that it was said in such a way. I remember being on a farm. My mom passed when I was 9, I believe, and I was sent south to live. I grew up here in the city in Chicago.
Right.
But when my mom passed, her only sister was living on a farm, so we had to go live with her. And in order to eat, you had to chop cotton.
Right.
So I know what physical labor was, and I was a smart kid in school. I wasn't always the obedient one, but I was smart. And I just remember days asking myself, I know this is not the career path that I chose.
Sure.
I don't know how I'm going to get out of it. And I ran away 3 times. The third time was successful, hitting the car. My sister coming back to Chicago. Don't ask me. That's a whole other book. I got to write about that. But the feeling of being unloved, unappreciated, because it was one thing going to the cotton gin. That's where you turn the cotton in after you pick it.
Right, right.
There was an old Southern, I'm going to call him a gentleman, even though he was not. He said, you see that little nigga gal right there? She ain't going to never be nothing. And that stuck with me until this day. There's a book called We Have Issues in Our Tissues. Those are
right.
The issues that I'm working on right now.
Right.
Because it's that kind of thinking that you carry with you from birth until death, until you learn how to release the need that was in you that causes a pattern to show up in your life.
Right, right. You know, Val, we all have those type of microaggressions that occur. And, you know, a lot of times we as black folks are told, oh, you're too sensitive, get over that. But no, that those things really affect you.
Yes.
It just grows from there. I remember being a very bright student in school. My grandmother, when I was in Panama, my mother's the oldest of 10 children.
Oh, wow. Big family, yeah.
So I was almost like the 11th or 12th child. I had other cousins, but I was living with my grandparents at that time. And my grandmother pulled me aside one day, and I was going to preschool. You had to take a towel. There weren't paper towels and that kind of thing. You had to take a towel and wash your hands and dry your hands off after you ate, you know, your lunch. And she gave, and most kids came with a white towel. You know, and everyone had a white towel, and those would get confused. She gave me a blue towel. She wrote my name on it, and she said to me, I'm doing this because you're special. You know,
oh.
I watched you amongst all my grandkids, and I see that you're special. Now, and I believe that. Now, I didn't know she was telling all grandkids that. In- but I actually believe that. So when I came to America, and I was a very good student, a bright student in what they call the gifted program, and we were building these little engines like in third grade, you know, which was fascinating to me. But the reality of it is my parents didn't have the resources or the funds to contribute to the materials that were being added to this engine. And I recall being berated by an older engineer who was be there to assist us, basically saying, look, if you can't contribute here, you can't participate.
Ooh.
And I just said in my mind, this is never going to happen to me again. I'm not going to allow this to continue to happen to me. I'm going to make sure I work hard to get the resources, but no one is ever going to treat me like that again.
Oh, my goodness. It leaves a stain on your soul.
It certainly does.
Wow. That is powerful. It is 8:10. If you are just joining the conversation this morning and you're wondering who this lovely young man is, he is the only attorney that I ever knew and I've heard of because I used to work in a law firm, so I kind of,
right.
I follow law. And then I studied law my first year in college, so I'm always in the back checking what's going on in the law, even though I'm glad I didn't pursue a career in law because
yeah.
Everybody that I went to school with law with, they hate it right about now.
Right.
But there's an exception to the rule. And thank you for hanging in there and doing the work that you do because nobody else would take this on. As you said in your story, nobody else wanted to do this because they didn't see the positive outcome that you've seen. So during this whole process, I remember you talking about the Senate and the Congress and how they're blocking things. How long do you anticipate this plan of action to fulfill itself?
You know, only time will tell.
Mm.
It seems like every Congress, every Senate, when the Democrats are in charge, it doesn't last very long, and that they are blocked at every turn. So, you know, it is going to be a slow process. But again, you know, trying to shine the light on it with talking about this case, with putting a book out about this case. I hope it enlightens and it kind of shines a light so that there are some changes within the USDA, and not only within the USDA in that process, but I hope that it causes America. If you read my book, look, I want you to be knowledgeable, but I also want you to get angry, you
mm.
know, because I got angry writing the book,
mm.
recognizing that we need to, as America, as a society, examine the processes and the systems that we have in place
mm.
and see whether they're being implemented correctly
mm.
and equitably. And that's a process that, you know, we'll just have to take on each industry at a time. You mentioned Roundup. I'm one of the lawyers in the class action case for Roundup as well. And you're right. They knew for a very long time that Roundup was problem,
mm-hmm.
just like they do the talc powder was a
mm-hmm.
problem.
Mm-hmm.
But why wasn't it really a big problem? Because you know who used more powder than anyone? Black folks. And so it wasn't an issue then because it wasn't affecting, you know, what I would say the greater society, the majority society. You know, I represent groups of tens of thousands of folks who have hip failures and prosthetic hips that they had placed in their bodies where the metal is rubbing against each other, poisoning the blood.
Say that! Oh, my God!
and they know it. And they know it.
And don't care.
They don't care. They just continue, exactly. It is all about, you know, about
revenue. Revenue. I'm so glad you said that because we have a regular caller. Her name is Mama AZ. She lives in Arizona, and she is in a recovery facility at this moment because she always
wow.
keeps us abreast. She's a strong soldier. I think she's
right.
in her 80s, and she just had a hip replacement. And the problems that she has had, I think this is her second or third.
Right.
And she talks about all the problems that she has. They are putting this system that we are currently under, specifically the medical profession, they're experimenting with our bodies. I'll put it like that.
Right.
Because
right.
they don't know the outcome. They have an idea what
right.
the book has taught them, but that's not the reality. The reality is these are foreign objects that we're putting in our bodies, and our bodies are saying, don't think so.
Right, right, exactly. You know, with many of these hips, because of the poisoning, I don't want to get too technical here, but the difference in the type of metal, you know, they don't put the same type of metal on the neck as they do on the portion that it connects to, and just kind of between those two metals being put together and then being put in the body, and the chemicals in the body causes kind of a, lack of a better term, a chemical reaction.
Yes.
That just eats away at the muscle.
Yes.
Around the hips, and ultimately
yes.
causes the hip to fail.
Lord.
And all there are different materials that they could use in order to make these hips, but, you know, unfortunately, as you said, it's about revenue, and the way they've been doing it has been most profitable to them as an industry. But you know what? I'm out there, and I'm not watching, and I'm on it. And there are others out there like me who are also fighting that same fight.
Well, on behalf of our listening and viewing audience and every people all around the world, we thank you, we appreciate you, and please, we send you more love, light, and healing energy to keep the energy that you need and the stamina to keep going, because I know this is an uphill battle all the way. Let's go to the phone lines, 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak. As we go to 336-350, you're live on the Female Solution. What's your name, where you're calling from, and what's your question as it relates to the $1.25 billion settlement for black farmers with attorney Greg Francis. Where did I get Jerry from? Greg Francis. Somebody named Jerry somewhere is calling me. That's probably Miss Jerry, my Be It Wiz part. We play Be It Wiz all the time. Attorney Greg Francis. Hi, who's this? Who's calling?
This is Mama AZ, Sister Zelda. How are you?
That's Mama AZ. Hi, Mama AZ. Oh, thank you so much for calling this morning. How are you feeling, dear?
Oh, I tell you, my body is going through a journey, but I'm grateful to be on this side of the dirt. I kind of tuned in late, and this is another show. Now, greetings to your guest. Is it Brother Francis?
Attorney Greg Francis. Yes, ma'am.
Wow, that's interesting.
We just talked her up.
Right.
Okay. Wow. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am. We can hear you.
Okay. It's two things. One major thing that has helped me to get through this journey is being out with Mother Nature and working with the Earth family. And we must find a way to get to somebody who can grow the food that we eat. It is so vital, especially to ones who look like us. I mean, the indigenous people. And I'm a strong person. I'll be 70 next year. And they've been experimenting on me as long as I can remember, and I can remember back to 4. Sometimes things may be 2 years old I can remember, but when they really started cutting on me, I can remember at 4, and I'll be 7 next year. And it's,
Mama,
and
did they start cutting on you at age 4?
Yeah, I've had about 40 surgeries. Yeah. When I was younger, I lived in the hospital. They call it Crippled Children's Hospital back then, but it's Shriners now. But remember, people, it was Crippled Children's Hospital, and this was in Phoenix. I don't know what they did in other states or whatever, but I know in Phoenix, Arizona, it was called Crippled Children's, how I got in there, my mother knew people, but they saw me coming, and this little child with kinky hair, and she was red, and they started experimenting on me, and my mother didn't know. But food, let me stick to the point. Farmers, I'm so grateful that you were able to do your thing that you came to the planet to do, sir. Now, did they get all of their money? What you fought for? Did they get all of what you got them?
Did you hear a question, Greg?
Did they ask the question?
Did they get all the money that you asked for?
Yes. That $1.25 billion was the number that we negotiated with the Justice Department under the Obama administration at the time. And ultimately that resulting in many of the farmers getting, $50,000 as an award for, discrimination that they had faced. One of the things too I wanna say is, this case really involved discrimination of the farmers between 1981 and 1996, a 15-year period. We know that it didn't start in 1981.
Oh, no.
It certainly didn't end in 1996.
Oh no.
So this only addresses a small portion, 15 years of the history of black farmers, and that the farmers are due way more than $50,000.
And you know that I'm like $50,000. That's an insult.
I have another question.
Equitable, if you recall or understand, many of the folks who are now receiving these funds were a lot of times the descendants of the farmers. Some of our biggest meetings in terms of numbers of folks who had to come out were in big cities like Chicago.
Okay.
And I came to find out, Chicago for black folks is Mississippi North.
Okay.
So many people who have moved to Chicago.
You better say it.
And places like that. That's where, many of these descendants lived, and this was money for these descendants. It certainly did not make it right. It certainly wasn't equitable. It wasn't something that was, people would think 1.25, you got the reparations. No, it was a distinct period of time, and black farmers are owed way, way, way more than that.
If you ask me, each farmer should get $1.25 billion when you get through talking.
Attorney, were in that lawsuit, were the farmers down in North Carolina, because I lived almost 40 years from 79 to 2017 in North Carolina, in High Point. And I was connected to ones down like in Lumberton and Tillery and other places around North Carolina who were fighting to get monies. Were some of the ones in North Carolina awarded?
She says, were any of them in North Carolina?
The vast majority of the cases were in, Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama, North and South Carolina.
Mm.
That's where the vast majority were. But they still went by Virginia and, other places, Oklahoma, Texas. But the vast majority were right there in the rural South, the Bible Belt, as they call it.
Mm-hmm. Mississippi.
Right.
Alabama. Texas.
One of the interesting things about it too, and that's why I give him all the credit that I do, is, Mike Espy grew up in Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
and he grew up with his father, who had learned at the at Tuskegee from George Washington Carver about agriculture. He came out and he was a farm service agent, and he would come home and tell his children all the time of the plight of the black farm, how they were being discriminated against, and he was passing on their complaints to the USDA and passed them on, and nothing happened. And on Mike Espy's first day as Secretary of Agriculture, one of the very first things he did is he asked the staffer to go down into the basement and get his father's notes that his father had sent.
Mm.
And they brought it up to him, and as he went through those notes, he was reinvigorated and knew that he had a purpose in the USDA.
Mm.
Now, I'm trying not to be a conspiracy theorist.
Mm-hmm.
However, he was adamant about aiding black farmers.
Mm.
And less than 2 years into his term as Secretary of Agriculture, he was indicted. He was indicted for bribery, taking extra. majority of the people that he was regulating, and he vehemently denied that claim. There were 18 different counts against him that he refused to admit to that, to any of that, because he hadn't done it. They even came and just admitted one, and we won't, you know, we'll stop. And he refused. He went to trial against the U.S. government, against this prosecutor. And as he said, as he came out of the courtroom, he said, you know what? My guy showed up today and showed out. He was found innocent on each and every claim.
All right, now. See, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. When you face first. So kudos to him. Oh, Lord, now, that is so good to hear, because somebody somewhere is watching this show and they going through it.
Right, right, right. You know, I was talking on my book. The audio book is done by...
Oh, you have an audio book too.
Oh, God, I can't think of his name now. Whitley Phipps.
Oh, yeah.
Whitley Phipps does the audio portion of the book, and you know, I'm talking to him. He said, "Greg, let me tell you how faith works." He's a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
But let me tell you how faith works. He said, "When you asked me about this book, I was interested, and I started reading some of the book because I had to send him a manuscript. And he was reading some of the book. He's like, this sounds familiar." And he said, "Listen, Greg, 30 years ago, I was a pastor in Washington, D.C. And I had this young man who would come in the back of the church all the time with his head down, and you could tell he was going through something."
Mm-hmm.
He was really going through something, and he said one day he woke up and he called that member of his congregation, and he agreed to have Whitley Phipps come over and see him. They came over, they sat down, they talked. Whitley prayed with him that, you know, the Lord's will be done, and that he remains strong and steadfast. And, you know, ironically enough, he said, "Who is that, Greg? You know who that person was?" I said, "No." He said, "Mike Heskin." So for the things to just all kind of fall in place like that, I know that, you know, they're the divine function. I certainly, you know, I have had experiences in my life that I know are not at the... weren't created by the hand of any other human, but that there is an upper being who has looked out for me and has provided me with grace. And I think it's even more evident in this book when Whitley Phipps told me that story exactly.
And when you said Whitley Phipps, I'm like, oh, my God. I learned about him when I was on the air in Chicago, a station called WGCI Gospel Radio 1390 AM. And when I heard his voice the very first time, I was like, oh, my God, who is this man? And you have him on doing the audio version of the book, Just Harvest? Oh, my goodness. I can't wait to hear that one. And where can we find that at?
That's also on Amazon, and I think it's on Amazon. That's where you get the audio book.
Okay. Yeah.
He has a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful voice.
Unique, divine, one of a kind, never heard of a voice like it, ever.
Right. I was very surprised when it was even suggested that he may be willing to do the audio book. I really, again, you know, I didn't think, I said, look, here's someone who has been a spiritual advisor to Oprah.
Yes.
You know, amongst others, you know, he's not going to be interested in this, but in fact, he read the manuscript and became convicted to it, and wants to use some of the concepts that are in the book to aid in some of the charitable work that he's doing.
Well, congratulations on that and many, many more. Hold on, Mama AZ. We got to take our last commercial break. And when we come back, I'm going to go to the phone lines for 779-801. You can join the conversation. So stay close. We'll be right back here with you.
Do you worry about finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down-to-earth, solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul. Whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code The Female Solution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
Are you constantly arguing with your spouse? Are your children misbehaving and acting out? Is someone in your family abusing drugs? Have you been the victim of domestic violence? Are you grieving over the loss of a loved one? Let us help you restore serenity to your life. At Serenity Family Social Services, we understand that good mental health is the result of emotional well-being. Our goal is to assist you and your family in removing emotional distress and restoring harmony and balance to your lives. We offer individual, couples, and family counseling. I'm Howard Williams, CEO of Serenity Family Social Services. Call us today at 312-315-4820. That's 312-315-4820.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viato.
Speaks, and we're joined by attorney Greg Francis, who has won the largest U.S. Largest settlement for black farmers in U.S. history. Screen here, you can see this is the name of the book that he wrote, Just Harvest, available on Amazon.com, and the one that I have up here is just from Target. So you can see that this is a book that you need to read. And if you don't have the time, essence, or energy to read it, then you can get the audio version. Oh, my goodness. Whitley Phelps is on the audio version. I can't believe this. Oh, I just get more excited every time I come back from commercial break. Let's go to the phone line, 779-801. You're live on The Female Solution. Grand Rising, what's your name? What city are you calling from?
Grand Rising, this is Maika. How are you all? Thank you, Attorney Greg Francis. Thank you, Attorney Greg Francis, for the work you put into winning the lawsuit in honor of the farmers. I began farming in 1966-67 in Tennessee. A group of us from the city, I was born and raised in Chicago, but a group of us from the city were told by a major civil rights leader that, you know, that we were based on law, we were free people, and the first thing that a free people do is they feed themselves. And all of us agreed to start learning how to do that. And so we got some farmers who were seasoned and knew what they were doing to start teaching us. And as we continued to grow through the years, because we continued that, we did have the problem of not being able to finance some of our operations. It was very difficult to get seed money to start off we start off in the spring. So we did get some grants from some churches, some church organizations, but that was a major problem throughout the year, getting the money. And so I just want to thank you for the work that you've done. And also I want to say to you, in relationship to something I heard you say earlier, one of the most crippling things in our society today is that we get angry.
Mm.
Anger, it takes energy to be angry.
Yes,
and when
does.
You release that anger, as an emotional therapist, when you release that anger, do you know what comes forth?
Mm-mm.
Your creativity.
Mm.
You have to let go of these toxic emotions that we've learned to hold on, which don't create anything, and so that our real positive energy can come forth.
Mm.
So if you want to be more creative, you have to release anger. And then the scripture says, the anger of man does not work the righteousness of God. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Amen.
And again, thank you for the work that you have done in honor of the farmers. And what year was that that the lawsuit was won?
First of all, thank you for that clarification. You're absolutely right. Now, I don't want people to be angry, but I want them to be motivated.
Mm.
And motivated is a better term or a better way to describe exactly the emotions that I'm trying to elicit from the book. The initial case was settled in approximately 1999-2000. However, as I mentioned, because of the lack of connectivity in the black farming community, between the lack of connectivity and then quite frankly, you know, black farmers just didn't realize, didn't believe that this government who had discriminated against them for so long was actually not going to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
So the vast majority of the farmers who had been aggrieved and who had claims to file ended up missing the six-month deadline that was put in place in order to bring this case. And that's when, you know, again, I was involved kind of in the second part of the case where the vast majority of the farmers who had been left out ultimately had their cases heard.
Mm. Wow. They missed the deadline. And I ask myself the question when I hear
the money.
Purposely. I'm sorry, Mike.
What happened to the money that was allocated?
She says, what happened to the money that was allocated?
But that money has been distributed to the black farmers. Almost 19,000 black farmers or their descendants were given the $50,000. Actually, it was $62,500. They were given $52,000 and then $12,500 to pay taxes back to the government.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling and commenting, Mike. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
I have a question. How far did that money that they received, how far did that money go? Did it really do any good?
The recipients, you know, it kind of varies in each and every family and every familial situation. But, you know, I would suspect that it is not, as I said, I don't think that it is full compensation for what the farmers have been through or their families have been through. But it was at least an indication of paying towards what the USDA know that they had done to black farmers. Sure, there are some farmers who, you know, were able to use that funds to kind of fortify the farms that they were on. But as I said, you know, many of these claims were ultimately brought by the descendants of these farmers, and they weren't necessarily farmers. They were living in Chicago and, you know, Detroit and those type of places. And what they did with the money, who knows?
Yeah, and I just, you know, you can't print enough money,
right,
to justify the damage that was done for centuries, not a few years, not a few decades, but for centuries. I don't think they can print enough money. And if that is...
No. Yeah, exactly. They can't print enough money, but that's why the conversation on reparations becomes so caustic with the greater population is because when you start doing the calculations, you got to, oh, my goodness, no, we can't do that.
Mm.
But, you know, if you look back during the time of the Emancipation Proclamation, it was President Lincoln's idea in creating the USDA, and once the farmers were free, that he was going to give black farmers, get this now, this here's a fun fact, he was going to give black farmers the land between Charleston, South Carolina, and St. Augustine, Florida, all that coastal land, and he was going to allow the black farmers themselves to determine whether they want some outside help or whether they wanted to govern themselves within that area. As we know, 6 days later, President Lincoln was shot and killed. Andrew Jackson, who had been a governor from Tennessee, took over and scrapped all of those plans.
Mm.
But just imagine that. Think of the value of that land between Charleston, South Carolina, and St. Augustine, Florida. And what that would have meant to black farmers and black folks, period, in terms of being able to build families and build generational wealth.
And you
I'd
have...
like to say something else, Zelda, if I can.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Yes, you know, so as a result, farmers were always seen as poor people, and so people moving to the city, you know, that was to get money. Basically, mm-hmm. to be able to take care of their families.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the farmers who are skilled at this time are getting old. And
yes.
Literally, I live in a farm community, and they don't have, I mean, very skilled. And
mm-hmm.
they don't have anyone to pass those skills down to, which then
mm-hmm.
goes to, which means then the factory farmers become so necessary. And yet, you know, when you look at what's happening in America today, food, you know, that's being shipped from ports all over the world and what have you, we right here are not able to produce the food that we need. I mean, when you think about the hurricane that came and destroyed all the land in Louisiana and what have you, those were farms that
yes.
are not producing now as a result of that. All the heat that was in the West this past year. Those are farms that are not producing right now. And farmers need help, and people in the city need to keep abreast of what's going on in the country and what's happening, I'm talking about the rural area, and in relationship to farmers, because everything that the food that they eat is dependent on these farmers being treated properly and correctly and justly and amicably. So encourage city people, connect with a farm, connect with a farmer. Pembroke Township, Illinois, is one of the greatest farm communities in the North. It has some of the most knowledgeable farmers in the world, because in the 40s, when they started putting out DDT to farmers, they said that here was too poor, so they passed over it. So these farmers had to learn how to grow food and maintain food naturally. These are natural farmers here in Pembroke Town, Illinois. Thank you so much, but we have to support our farmers, and they need support now financially.
Yes.
They still need support.
Thank you so much for that, Monica. Attorney Francis, what can we do as people in the community? What can we do to support this effort? Monica brought up an excellent point.
Well, I think one of the first things is first, as I said, the awareness, to understand that, you know, the food that you go to the grocery store and buy is not, it doesn't just magically appear there. And the grocery store, more likely than not, I'm sure there are exceptions to this, have no involvement in actual the growing of the food. So we need to be concerned, as the caller said, about the plight of farmers in particular. It would be nice to kind of go out and visit a farm and kind of see the process that is going on. But importantly, it's very important to support your local farmer's market. That market that is providing the fresh fruits and vegetables and other crops, to support those areas, because that's the only outlet that the farmers have to distribute their food. You know, I can tell you about here in Florida, Zelda, millions of pounds of food, of crops are thrown away every year because it goes bad, because there's a lack of a system that will ensure that what is grown and then makes it all the way to market.
Mm-hmm.
So if you start supporting those farmers markets, if you go to a farmer's market, you get your fruits and vegetables, That is really supporting a small farmer somewhere. And that's kind of just the beginning of the process. And in addition to, we just have to change our minds that, you know, there's so many things that we have been taught and told and, you know, experienced throughout life. We need to change our mindset that, you know, being a farmer is not poor and it's not about being educated. There's a science to it. There's chemistry to farming. And
it
takes a great deal of intelligence.
Yes.
But it's something that because, you know, the slaves did it, that it was relegated to being poor and uneducated. Well, that's not where we are anymore. We understand what the process is, and we just have to, you know, make a conscious effort to ensure that we don't allow that to continue.
I'm so glad you said that. You know, there is just this misconception, and it'll be there until we do our job as citizens, humans, humankind, to dispel those myths about the ignorance of farmers. Like you said, that's a talented skill, because I remember the first time I went to pick some cotton, and I looked at my aunt like she was crazy. I'm like, what am I going to do with this? She's like, baby, let me sit down here, let me tell you a few things. I'm not going to go off into that, but...
Yeah.
She gave me a very minute history of farming and the entry fees of how it develops and how the fruits and the vegetables bloom and the season and the watering and the just the, I was like, wow, I got this. Like, are you mad at me? Did you have to tell me all this at once? I'm only 11. I can't hold all that stuff in my head. But the fact that we are looked as less than human and less intelligent is the biggest myth that we have been told. When I was listening to last night's show, we're on the Female Solution. We are on 7 days a week, 7 until 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, on Saturdays from 12 noon until 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. And on Sunday evenings, we have our Friday host who does health and well-being on Friday. On Sunday night, she does a show from 7 until 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, and it's called, help me out, Maika. I've got my list right here.
Soul Purpose Healing.
I listen to it every Sunday. I'm just so overwhelmed this morning. And in that show, I learned, that's why I love listening to this show, not just host, but I learned, this is a learning experience for me. She talked about how the third, we have seven layers of skin, right? How the third layer of our skin, for lack of a better word, you got to go back and listen to the show, is crystallized. The third layer of our skin, and that makes us geniuses, and we don't even know it.
Right.
You have.
Right.
I was like, what? Really?
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm 65 years old and I'm just learning this? Are you serious?
One of the things that you said that I think is so important too is, and your history of farming and picking the cotton is, you know, cotton made America a world power. The growing of the cotton,
yes, sir.
It became very popular all over the world and really put America in a position of power. But we know who was growing that cotton and who was harvesting that cotton.
Yes, sir.
That can't be lost on us.
No.
We have played a great, tremendous part in America and the power and the position that we now hold in the world.
I'm so glad you said that because when I first started the public speaking, I told my story of picking cotton. And I shared with my audience that the reason why I would not wear cotton, I wear it now. I love it because I know better. I have a different consciousness. But I would not wear cotton because I was so damaged by the experience of picking the cotton. I want to see cotton again as long as I'm living. But cotton is the number one fabric in the world. And had it not been for black folks humming in the field, oh, Mary, don't you weep. If we had not been humming and singing, and let me tell you what else I learned on the Female Solution, that humming heals the inflammation in the body. What? Humming.
And you wonder why our parents, grandparents hum all the time. They knew something innately. They didn't need a book to tell them that. How powerful is that?
That's very powerful. And that's exactly what I was talking about, Zelda, is, you know, that kind of solitude that you have when you're out there farming.
Yes.
You know, I'm sure you were picking time with your family, so maybe y'all were having conversations. But there are times where it's just you and that crop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for many of these farmers, they get on that tractor in the morning, and they don't get back until the evening, and it's just them by themselves. And it really gives you a chance to think.
Yes, sir. Yes,
and
sir.
To kind of really consider your life and what's going on in your life.
And farming is a blessing in disguise. And they have us thinking just the exact opposite, that it's the worst experience. Well, as a child, it is a bad experience. If you're uprooted and abandoned from what you know, that is traumatic. But you got to get past the trauma, baby.
Right.
You got to get some EFT training. That's what Maika does, who just called in from Pembroke, Illinois. I had an episode one day where my back went out, and she helped tap me back into some pain-free existence. So I know it works. So there are modalities out there, and we're being joined by the executive producer of The Female Solution, and that would be Naima Latif. Welcome to the podium, my sister. And she is just a wow. I hate to put you on this pedestal, but I have to, because you open the airwaves for people like us to learn the truth about ourselves from that from which we came. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the podium, who joins us, Naima Latif, the executive producer of The Female Solution. Welcome, my...
The generation that followed the Great Migration, because they wanted us to focus on working in the factories.
Right.
They ridiculed people from the South. Oh, country bumpkin.
Right.
So that just became distasteful, that whole thought of going back to the farm and picking cotton and all of that.
Shameful.
But shameful. Yeah, but you right. know, like you were told, this crop is worldwide something that is used, and this is why the South was in conflict with the North, because the South was doing business overseas, almost like
right.
a nation, in competition with the North, because the South had the cotton farmers.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's why it became so wealthy. So, I mean, like you say, I mean, there's a whole history and politics behind this, and if we understood the value of that land that we had, and the value of growing cotton, and then with somebody like George Washington Carver, who explained that you don't overgrow the cotton and deplete
right.
the soil, and you rotate the crops like he taught them,
right.
peanuts and other crops, then you can constantly regenerate the land. But I do echo what Maika said about anger. We get so focused on being angry at what people are doing to us or haven't done to us or for us that we can't think.
Mm-hmm.
And if you release the anger, the inspirations will come to you on how you overcome the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Even
right.
with the lack of money, if you think about it, the early farmers didn't need money. They knew the science of farming. And like you were talking about the humming,
mm-hmm.
there's a science of sound. You think people just singing and dancing?
Mm-hmm.
There's a science
mm-hmm.
of sound. There's a vibration that helps the earth. And I found out just a few years ago, the birds sing at a pitch that helps the plants grow.
Mm.
Oh,
wow.
So when we're out there, if you watch, I don't know if you've seen in those films or maybe in Africa where they're farming, they have this whole rhythm where they walking in a row, it almost looks like a dance, you know, and they're singing and rhythm and harmony, and, you know, planting and all of that.
Right.
All of that's the science. So we may not have the big tractors or the money to get the big machinery, but there's a science that uses collective energy, the force of sound, and we have the capacity to nourish that land and grow things using our collective energy. And if we don't have any money, we can get the inspiration to use what we have. That just, of course, I think we talked about this during our class on farming. Then you can take a bag of potatoes and maybe you eat, maybe there's 10 potatoes, you eat 8 of them. The other two, you can put in a paper bag and let them sprout and then grow them, and each
right.
of those potatoes will grow another 10 potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what
right.
you store.
Right,
so
right.
You can, if you buy food with seeds, you can plant the seeds, and then you can have your own food. And
right.
that's what we're striving to teach this generation of urbanized food growers, so that we can empower ourselves in knowing how to grow our own food.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and so much of what you said is so important, Naima, and you're right. We have to release that anger, but be motivated about, you know, the plight of black farmers and the plight of our race in general. I think one of the things that allowed me to be somewhat effective in this case, and as I say, when I initially approached it with some skepticism, is that growing up and being from Panama originally, I didn't necessarily have the familial history of the discrimination here in America. So I didn't have a lot of the anger that had been passed on from previous generations about what exactly happened. I heard about it. My stepfather was from South Carolina, and he told me some horrific stories.
Mm.
But I didn't have it as much as maybe someone who's born and raised here and been here for several generations. So kind of my disconnectedness assisted me in looking at this from a larger and a different way to approach the case.
And with that said and done, it is almost 9 a.m. and the show is almost over. But before it is, we always have to play. Naima's always getting on me. You got to play the outro, Zelda. You got to just talk. Got to play outro.
That's the blog talk people know. Okay, if you're gonna on the internet, you're
Press 1 to speak and do that now if you want to speak. Because otherwise you won't be able to be on
the Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/TheFemaleSolution. Leave your comments about today's show.
Attorney Francis, excuse me, Greg Francis, you are more than welcome. I know you've got a caseload of cases to go to court, but you're welcome to stay on the after show. We appreciate you. And anything you'd like to share with our audience before you leave, and you're welcome to stay.
You know, one of the things I want to mention is that, you know, as I've said before, you know, God has had grace on me, blessed me. So the proceeds from this book will go to the Just Harvest Foundation. And with that foundation, I have kind of three efforts. First is education. I have endowed a fellowship, actually 10 fellowships, at the University of Florida College of Law for graduates of HBCUs to ensure that the best and the brightest from these institutions have an opportunity to go on and get a law degree and not be burdened by the financial requirements that are there.
Oh, wow.
So that's one thing. We just welcomed our first class of 10 students. Children who are out there who have no idea of all the different types of farming and the whole business of agriculture. So we're creating there's a farm that is being built here in Orlando, Florida, that we're going to take many of the inner city kids out to the farm. And this is not outlaying some rural area. It is still kind of in the Orlando proper area. So it's not, they don't have to go as far and understand that they can make a difference there. And then lastly is housing. As I talked about, the lack of passing on the generational wealth and what is lost there. I myself and this foundation have invested with and a program with churches where I have built a transitional home. And that's a home where you invite families in to live for 6 months. They continue to pay rent, but during that period, they are given financial literacy, taught about mortgages, taught about the value of owning a house. And then at the end of those 6 months, when they've gotten all those lessons, the rent that they paid for those 6 months, we turn around and give right back to
them. Wow. Yes,
down payment for housing. And, you know, probably 80% of the families who do it go on to become homeowners. So very proud of that.
Those are excellent. Win a billion-dollar lawsuit and pocket the money and keep going and ride off into yonder, as my granny used to say, you know, on a boat or on a yacht somewhere, but you have concrete plans to help not only this generation, but the generations to follow. So in that, we salute you, my brother.
Thank you very much.
And I do believe Maika is still on the line, and she had a question. Wow, we got the line lit up. Okay, why do you all do that? You light the lines up as we're about to go off the air. Okay, we're going to get to your calls, 32631 and others, 336. Just hold on. We'll get to you. Go ahead, Maika.
Yes. Thank you again, Greg, Attorney Greg, for the work that you're doing, the commitments you've made. Those are wonderful. A question that you asked earlier about what can we do as urbanites is we have to stay abreast of the legislation and the problems that farmers are having in the rural area. You know, most times in the city, they don't vote. They don't tell their congressmen and senators to vote on legislation that's affirmative to farmers, black farmers in particular. We have to do that. That's our interest. We have to become urban, rural people, not just urban people, but we have to have an investment in the city and the rural area because they're connected. As a matter of fact, we used to have a saying and when we were farming in Tennessee, if a woman won't use a hoe, she gonna be a hoe.
for
every good
man.
Oh, that is so funny. Oh, my goodness. What do whores use their money for? To get food, right? Well, if you use a hoe, you can get your food without selling your body.
Thank you.
What we came to.
That's real.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It made you laugh, but it also made you think. As Arsenio Hall, these things make you go, Okay. Yeah, because if you can't feed yourself and you're dependent on somebody else to feed you, they're going to mistreat you to get your goodies.
That's right.
About this is that, you know, America and the politicians in America realized after the abolishment of slavery, they knew how important the constant supply of food would be to a developing nation and how important it was to ensure that that would continue, which is why they created the USDA. So they wouldn't have created the USDA if they didn't believe overall how important it was to the strength of America.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to then, it's almost counterintuitive. It was so important that you created the USDA. However, there's just dumb, uneducated people doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't, you know, it doesn't really equate.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really equate, and we need to be mindful of that. It's like I tell people all the time. Somebody tells me, my vote don't count. Really? Why do you think they're trying so hard?
To keep you from voting.
Right.
It didn't matter. Your one vote didn't matter.
Right.
So you got to look beyond what they say. You got to look beyond what they say. And, you know, as black folks, we got to listen with both ears.
These ears and this ear.
Right.
And this ear, that third eye ear. That ear and the heart ear will never steer you wrong. I am so glad you said that. And let me just very briefly share a note before we get a couple of these calls about the USDA and other governmental systems and how we are being indoctrinated to believe that they are the end-all to everything. No, they're not. Roundup is great proof of that. But to go back to the USDA, probably about 10 years ago we were taping a show, a TV show, and we had a makeup artist who came in, and, you know, during the course of a conversation, get your makeup done, we're talking, and yada, and she worked full-time at the USDA, and the story she told me was that when manufacturers send in a product to distribute to the public, on the label, it has to say what's in the product.
Right.
It doesn't always be the truth, I'll put it like that.
Right.
So you're counting on a governmental agency to tell you that the stuff that you're about to put on your face and in your body is okay and it's legit, and it's not. She says because they did not have to prove that those ingredients were listed on the label were actually in the product. And I was like, what? She's like, girl, this has been going on for years, but, you know, I can't say anything. But we had a conversation off camera, and the thing she told me made me want to stop eating, period. I ain't stop eating, but but you get my drift.
So basically they can lie, and there's nobody to follow up to verify what they say.
Who's going to dispute them?
Yeah, who has time?
Besides a lawyer.
Somebody sick or died, and then there's an investigation.
Right. And the insurance companies already have money set aside.
Who's going to check me?
Right.
Who's
going to check me, baby?
Who's going
to
check me?
That's where the government is a lot of times, because, you know, who's going to challenge the government?
Right.
You know, bold enough to say no, what you're doing as a government is not right or it's wrong, or why aren't you enforcing these rules? So I certainly see that being, you know, very prevalent in a bunch of the systems. You know, I'm currently investigating housing in the U.S. Housing Department.
Really?
How, you know, many of these mixed income properties that these developers are getting incentives for, how quickly they will add things onto the rent to get those people who are on HUD funding out of there and get in, you know, full
rate market,
full time or full paying residents.
Yes.
So that's kind of the next journey that I have begun in investigating that.
Well, please keep us in tune, and we'll have you back on the show to talk about that, because homelessness is a big issue all over the world.
Right.
In 2019, my little brother, who was homeless, was murdered by another homeless man, and it was all in the Chicago Tribune and everything. And that made me much more aware of the homeless plight, and we started taking, you know, groceries and food and clothing, blankets, and that's one of the things that we do here on the Higher Learning Network, is that we accept donations, which are tax deductible for those who want to give to the homeless, because they always need generators. It's cold in Chicago. It's not like Florida, Greg. It is extremely cold. They need blankets. They need generators. They need gloves. They need hats. You name it, they need it. And so many of us have too much in our closets that you don't even have to go out and buy anything. Just clear out your closet and go take it to a homeless shelter or a homeless tent city. We have a tent city here in Scotland. And there are tent cities all over the place.
Yeah.
All
right.
over the place.
Right.
So thank you for doing that. And please, please, please come back and tell us more about the housing. Do you have a time to take a couple of calls?
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. 779. 801, oh, that's already up. I'm sorry. 312-631. You are live on the Female Solution Grand Rising. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Will Crosby. I'm calling from Illinois.
Hi, Will Crosby. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, so glad to be here and listen to this conversation. You know, I'm very interested in the whole question of sustainable farming for our community. About 20 years ago, I took a friend of mine to Pembroke, Illinois, Fred Carter. And, I had been going to Pembroke since the 70s because another friend of mine's grandparents had actually bought some of the first land in Pembroke and started parceling it out to black farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So, I thought it was something, we used to have these discussions about food sustainability. And so, listen to this brother, I know in 1920, we had 1 million black farmers. And so presently we have developed a healthy food hub over those last 20 years. And we're teaching people how to become farmers and how to get into the land. And I don't know what the brothers did around the black northern farmer. Because this was mostly focused on the southern farmers.
Mm-hmm.
But, in all these states from Ohio to Illinois, there were black farmers that were in the north, even though they were dealing with a whole other kind of question. Presently, the United States government has a program at the USDA, and we just created a corporation around it where they're giving 10 acres of land to black farmers, females, and veterans.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking to create a large greenhouse. I'm very interested in meeting this brother and have more discussions around the whole question of the my family owned farms in Georgia. And I was talking to my cousin, we had 800 acres at one time, and now we only have 200 acres. And so I don't know how that affects me because I wasn't part of that $50,000 giveaway.
Oh, okay. Are you a farmer?
No, but
Will?
My family. No,
family.
I'm a farmer. I'm an organizer for farmers. I
can't
say I'm a farmer.
Okay. Organizer for farmers. Okay.
I'm more into the active. I'm an activist. That's my history. I do understand the relationship of the land and our people because, my great-grandparents left the South in 1908 because of the kind of racist stuff that was taking place in the South. That's my great-grandparents, not my grandparents, my great-grandparents. So my family's been in Chicago since 1910 and in terms of living. We got disconnected from the land. Most black people who live in the North get disconnected from the land. It's a reparations question because we're talking about 1 million black people that used to be farmers in 1920.
Mm.
Now, there were 1 million black people, a 1 million black families. Let me get that clear, not just people. 1 million black families were farmers in 1920, or 14% of the whole farm question. So now we're down to like 1% of the farmers. 98% of the farmers in America are white.
Mm.
And so I think there's another suit around the people who live in the North who were forced out of their land, who had to come live in urban areas and find a living because it was against their health and life to stay in the South.
Mm.
So, and then one more thing. I heard the brother talking about housing. I think there's a guy you need to know, a guy by the name of Lionel Nixon. He can give you a bunch of assistance on your housing questions because he was being trained to be an undersecretary back in the late 70s in D.C., but he was an activist, and so the government people didn't pretty much like it, but he's very knowledgeable on housing. So you may want to reach out to him in terms
of... What's the name? Lionel what?
Lionel Nixon.
Lionel, yeah.
Yeah,
he works with the Section 3 something or another, yeah. So he's a fellow journalist, yeah, very, very familiar with him.
But he's a housing specialist as well.
Oh,
he was
okay.
Undersecretary at HUD. He was going to either be a secretary of HUD, but because of his political, he was working as real community activist stuff with the people in Washington, D.C., around the public housing question, and he was supposed to be working with those people as the undersecretary, but he was. He was in the ghetto at D.C., you know, working with the people. So, you know, when you do certain stuff because you came up, you know, when you come up under people like Timmy Black and other certain black people, you get it's a certain stuff you can't ignore, you know what I'm saying? And so I would just ask that brother that he reaches out to him for his housing questions, but I think he can help him answer a lot of stuff he may be looking for.
Okay.
And so, you know, I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to really have a discussion with the brother, but, you know, I hope he stays on the case, and I hope maybe he'll even look at the million people who lost, million families who lost their land and who ended up in the North.
Okay, wow, that's powerful. Thank you so much for that, Mr. Crosby. Can you tell us, Greg, he said in 1920 there were a million black farmers. In 2021, how has that number changed?
You know, that number has diminished tremendously. I can tell you, I can't tell you about exactly today, that by the time I got involved in this case, that there were less than 40,000 active black farmers out in America. So you think of...
Did you say 40,000?
60,000. Down to about 40,000.
Oh,
wow.
My goodness.
Mm.
Down to from 1 million to 40. Oh, my goodness.
Right.
And you wonder why I grew up.
Zelda, from working on a farm, it is hard work out there.
Yes.
And there was a migration of a bunch of folks to the bigger cities. However, it is because of the treatment, and no one can tell me differently. Just because of the treatment and the stigma that was placed on black farmers that caused the farmers either to leave themselves or to ensure that I'm going to make sure my child gets an education so they don't have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Because it's just, you know, it's not in our best interest. Well, it is because one of the things that he said was, and Maika said, and Naima said, and we've all said during the course of these shows, is that we have been disconnected from the land. Mama AZ was sharing with us how she goes and plants her feet in the dirt because the earth, especially at the base of the tree, has all the answers. All the answers. Everything you need is implanted in the earth. But if you can just go there and sit at the base of that tree, and you don't even have to do what I do and have a conversation with the tree. Mwah, thank you for joining me this morning. You don't have to have a conversation with, but you do have to sit and listen. And the listening doesn't always, the answers don't come when you think they will. They'll come when you're going about your day, doing your daily task or walking or watching
right.
or writing. All the answers are in the earth. And they are taking us from the earth. Oh, sit in the grass? Are you crazy? I play
right.
cards outside in the summertime, and I'm trying to always get my citizens to play in the grass. Oh, girl, mosquitoes on my ankle. Oh, no, I can't do that. And it's like, but it will help the healing within. Girl, I go to the pharmacy and get me something. I can't be bothered with these mosquitoes. So the fact that even our seniors have been disconnected from the land,
yeah.
A healing is in order.
It's terrible. You know, that's one of the things I do for stress relief, as you said, is to, look, you know, get out of my suit, take off my shoes and my socks, and just walk around
in the dirt,
in the grass sometimes.
Yes, sir.
There's something about that that, as you said, it's kind of a reconnection and a reinvigoration of your purpose here and, you know, in your living.
Yeah, they got a name for it now. They call it grounding.
Yes,
you know,
grounding.
I do it all the time. And I say, oh, you know, now they're acknowledging that this is helpful because you're receiving the energy from the earth that is healing your body. But I have a question for Attorney Greg.
Hold that thought right quick, Naima. Hold that thought. I just wanted to go and get and show you all this dirt. This is a pot of dirt that I keep. When I come in the house, I take my shoes off and I put my feet in the dirt and just sit there and hum for a few minutes.
Put your feet in dirt. I like that.
Put the feet in dirt and just sit there and breathe in and breathe out and hum and see what happens. Just sit there. And people think I'm crazy. I don't care, child. Call me crazy because at this stage in my life, it's not what you call me. It's what I respond to, and I'm not responding
Amen.
To any of that.
Amen.
So grounding is crucial. Go ahead, Naima.
Yeah. Well, and thinking about what Will said, but the farmers that have left, you know, and we know that historically people many times had to flee for their lives because of the oppressive violence, but also is one of the factors, if you may have discovered this in the course of your lawsuit, is one of the factors how the farming industry became large corporate structures. So in many ways, it's like the ma and pa stores that people used to own got kind of chased out of business by the big corporate entities, the Walmarts and so forth. Same way the small family farms kind of got shoved out of existence by the big corporate farms that they couldn't compete because, you know, you got your little crops and then they got this mass production system that makes it almost impossible for you to even enter the marketplace. Was that a factor?
Yeah, that absolutely was a factor as well, you know, the growth of those large, you know, corporate farms. But that was done largely because you know, they said they're not making any more land. So when they went out and started seeking areas and seeking land.
Did we just freeze? Oh, did we just lose Greg?
The last big planning.
Is it me? No.
No, Greg is freezing. He's giving out too much powerful information. The internet don't want us to know that, but we will keep you posted everything that he shared with us just by going to my blog, zeldaspeaks.wordpress.com. So,
Can they still hear you, or what happens? Because I'm not sure how that works. Sometimes, like when I'm on and I freeze, he says, "Oh, she's frozen," but I'm thinking I'm still talking.
I'm going to open up another window and see if I can't hear him talking and see what I see. Where are you? We're live now. Let's see what we see. Nope, he's froze there, too.
Oh, okay.
He just disconnected. So maybe hopefully he'll call back in. And I'm looking on another screen. I'm froze.
Oh, really? Well, I can see you.
You're still
moving.
Well, that's good enough.
Yeah.
Okay, so
Zelda.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I said I can hear you. Like, one of the things that I found that is a great need for farmers because of what you and Greg were just talking about, is tool banks. Banks of tools that farmers can utilize and share amongst themselves.
That's
a great need. Like, that's a great need here in Pembroke because everybody doesn't have, they can't buy a tractor or the implements that go on the tractors or just you know, just basic tools. So
right.
tool banks will help farmers to advance in their agricultural pursuits.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have tools.
Yeah, and that's, you know, even the system that we're building called service, that's one of the kinds of things we want to be able to do is share things that people need. I mean, if your neighbor needs
yes.
a lawnmower and you got one, give it to them so they can, you know, trim their lawn. Same thing with farming, you know. If a group of farmers had one tractor between them, but they all shared it, then everybody would have the benefit of that tractor.
Right.
So when we start to think collectively, that's when we start
yes.
to think of solutions to the issues that we face. If everybody by themselves is trying to figure out, well, how I'm going to get the money, well, by yourself, you might not be able to do it, but collectively, if you can figure out ways, well, I got this, you got that, well, together we all have what we need if we all just share.
Mm-hmm.
That's always been a solution.
Mm-hmm.
So as
Absolutely.
You say, it's funding until you can get people to think in those terms. How can
yes.
we work instead of competing against each other? Why don't we work for one collective goal, and that is to grow food and grow the best, healthiest food possible.
True.
So, I think also one of the things that is crucial is that we pass on this knowledge. We're going to organize a group of young people to go down to where Maik is in Pembroke and help them participate as a learning process,
mm-hmm.
participate in the health and growing the food so they understand the process, even understanding the whole process of regenerating life. During the course of the pandemic farm classes we were holding, we talked about composting and how you take things like banana peels, orange peels, you know, the organic matter that you would toss in the garbage. Well, the earth can use this and recycle this. So you save this and you combine it with other organic matter. I mean, I learned all this stuff just researching and learning it through doing, you know, I was just public school here, Chicago Public School,
right.
they teach farming, they teach agriculture, you know, they prepare you for factory work that doesn't exist anymore. So the a lot of what we learn is obsolete. It's not going to get us anywhere when you get up to 12th grade. There's nowhere you can go with those with the knowledge you have because it's basically propaganda. It doesn't teach you any skills. So we have to teach the skills of survival, learning how to grow foods. We want to take groups of students down and have them farm, have them learn how to, you know, take their table scraps down, how to make compost, how to prepare what can be used to fertilize the land, and go through the process of seeing the earth prepare itself for the spring growth, learning the plants that grow in the land and what they can be used for. We want them to see it and experience it and know what it feels like to yourself and understand that you don't need money. You need air, water, food, and shelter. All of those things Mother Earth
mm-hmm.
gives us are absolutely free.
Mm-hmm.
All we have to do is
nothing. It won't cost you nothing.
Right.
Micah, go ahead.
Like one of the big problems now is I just found out that, like, farmers in the wintertime, you know, they got to feed their horses and their cows and
yeah.
all the other animals and what have you. Well, it's difficult to come up with the feed for that. But check this out. Here in Pembroke, one of the most abundant products is acorns, because this is where the acorn tree grows, you know? What's
uh-huh.
that? This year there's a bumper crop of acorns, but nobody's harvesting the acorns.
Oh.
We need to know
it's one of the greatest foods for livestock.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what happens to the acorns? They just go back into Mother Earth.
They become
nobody needs to pick them up.
Oh, wow.
Right. Or the squirrels eat some of them.
And harvest some acorns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do that. We know
or
enough young people.
We welcome you. I can open up some farms for you to do that.
You never know.
What'd you say, Maika?
I said, I can open up some land for you where you can come and get the acorns, pick them
okay.
For the farmers.
We'll be like
for astronomical prices to get hay in the wintertime.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. We'll be like Forrest Gump was with the gumbo. We'll have acorn soup, acorn tacos, acorn enchiladas, acorn hot tamales, acorn green, acorn this, acorn that. Wow. Yeah.
Quality, Zelda. There is acorn oil, which is very nutritious, acorn meal. All kind of things can be made from acorns that are beneficial also.
Wow.
For
who knew?
Yeah, see, you don't know until you explore. I mean, you know, Mother Earth gives us everything we need.
Everything.
All discover how to use it,
mm-hmm.
but it's already
mm-hmm.
there. Already there.
And stop depending on the sources outside of yourself to take care of you. If you haven't learned anything from anything up until 2020, you know you got to depend on you and Mother Nature to take care of you. Because that's the one thing I learned living on a farm is that the farm is your friend. It's not your enemy.
Yes, it gives you everything you need. And, you know, when we look at... Like my ego's talking about the food that needs to be fed to the animals, you can see if you do the wrong thing, how the wrong thing happens. Mad cow disease that came from them trying to feed cows, you know, flesh.
Right.
You know? And, giving their bodies what nature wants their bodies to have naturally. Well, you can't feed cows chopped beef.
No.
That, you know, cannibalism. And so what was happening was it was destroying them, and then we ate the meat and it was destroying us. So a lot of the things that we have to do in terms of care for the animals that provide things, you know, for those who drink dairy milk or whatever the case may be, you know, we have these corporate farms where cows are treated so cruelly and not allowed free range to sit there being milked by a machine all day. That's horrible. That's horrible.
I know, right?
So we can have farms where animals are treated humanely and they can have their families and natural life and eat the right foods that nature provides. We can do that, you know, because that's what you do when you think humanely as opposed to thinking profits at the expense of all other life, because that's how these corporate farms are. That the way animals are raised are very cruel, very
mm-hmm.
And
you're eating that cruelty.
You're eating the stress that they've lived their whole lives experiencing, anticipating a cruel death. You're eating that.
And you wonder why you ache.
Yeah.
You wonder why you're angry. You wonder why you're tired. You wonder why you're sick. Ask yourselves, what are you putting in this holy temple?
Absolutely, yes.
Mine was sugar. Pie, cake, cookies, it didn't matter. And if your body will get to the point and say, I'm not doing this anymore. And then what do you do? You have to do what I did. Reverse type 2 diabetes. Go to diabeticdonut.com. It's free.
Yeah. Oh, and what you said about the dandelion, reversing that. And how plentiful do dandelions grow in our grass? You know, my gardener, every time he comes to cut the grass, says, you know, I can bring my weed killer and put on it. I keep saying, no, I'm telling you, I'm eating this. It's
Thank you.
Do not poison the soil.
Thank
you. You should only get rid
of
it.
He don't know.
They're native plants.
Yeah.
That provide nourishment. Yeah. One thing I want to show you how to prepare. The burdock that's growing in my yard, and you got to pay the leg at a health food store to get burdock root.
Yep.
It's going right here. Dandelion.
$10. $10
right
for the tea container. $10 for the tea, and it's free in
it's
your backyard.
Free. Right there in the yard.
But
so well,
because it didn't come commercialized through the USDA, you don't trust it. Because it's growing in your backyard, you don't trust it.
Right.
You don't trust that nature has your back more so than the systems that we're living under.
Yes. And that's another thing, a lot of, like you were talking about these government agencies, a lot of them are designed to edge you out of being able to participate in the process of food growth and distribution. distribution. Oh, you don't have a this. Oh, you're not that. You're not approved. Mm-hmm. So that's why all the holistic health remedies, you can never get certified by the government. And those who know Dr. Sabi and all of his remedies, you know how he had to fight to show that he had already developed a cure for cancer, and they can say, oh, and nobody can say that. You can't legally say, yeah, but I'm curing people.
And when when he cured them, they killed him. Yeah, I said it. So if I come up missing, y'all know why.
People mysteriously disappear, yeah. Or, you know, mm-hmm. pass away, mm-hmm. and you know they're in perfect
mm-hmm.
health.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, because he built an organization where it's still existing, and you can still purchase the product that he developed, and his family kept it going, we can still learn, we can still benefit from what he taught. And that's what we should do, because he was an innovator of natural ways to heal the body using all the natural things that are grown in the ground. So, you know, like we always talking about this pharmaceutical industry and how it's killing everybody, but you're conditioned to expect you're going to have a medicine cabinet full of pills and bottles. I was listening to a presenter a couple of days ago that was talking about how your kidneys flush out all the toxins. But when you overtax your kidneys, because you're using all of those pharmaceutical products, then they can't keep the toxins out of your body. So
mm-hmm.
people who are on a lot of medication, those are the people who are susceptible to the virus right now.
Yep.
And the irony is you're being told to put more artificial substances in your body to fight this unnatural substance that was created in a lab. But what's going to happen, more people are going to add, oh, who was that that just passed away? Colin Powell just passed away from COVID that appeared on my device this morning.
Oh, wow.
He was fully vaccinated, and he passed away.
Oh, wow. And he wasn't even sick.
Yeah, you know, and also he had COVID and he passed. Okay.
Wow.
And he had the vaccine. So what's going to happen is, you were going to see a lot of people who had the shot halfway, and we'll be told, well, the remedy is that they needed more shots. So that will happen. More people will get more shots. More people will get will pass away, and eventually people will understand, you know what, this is not good. And then they'll be angry. But we have to go through the process of learning the hard way. Because there are people who, you know, something unnatural cannot help you. Your body already has a system to get rid of that which is unhealthy. But if you have already damaged your immune system by all of these pharmaceuticals, then you can't fight it off the way your body would have been able to if you hadn't been using these artificial pharmaceutical products. So we have to go through this process of learning this, and then we'll stop.
Let me add to what you're saying. You know, a lot of the problems that's leading to our healthcare disabilities is the fact that the soil is not fertile. It does not have the minerals in it that we need to take to keep our bodies healthy. So just like, you know, Dr. Carver came up with the peanuts to put the nitrogen and the minerals back in the soil after cotton stripped it out, that's the same thing that we need. We need these minerals from fresh fruits and vegetables that are grown in healthy, fertile soil. And that's so missing in the society. That's why the local family farmers are so important. You need to get it right where you eat it. And I think that's one of the Dr. Sebi emphasized, that you need to eat where you live.
Mm-hmm.
That those things that are growing around you is what you need to eat. And right out here in Pembroke, one of his assistants, who studied with him for about 15 years down in, I forget the country he was in, but she's here now. She bought land, and she's setting up what's called the One Love Health Center, I think it is. You know, she said she became a doctor after she left Dr. Sebi, and then she always wanted to set up a health center like he had down in the country where he was from. So that's going on in Pembroke now, too. So
Pembroke is the place to be. Right about now.
It is. We've even built a sweat lodge down here.
Oh my goodness, you have a sweat lodge in Pembroke? Oh my goodness,
yes, we had chief from the Lakota tribe to come here from South Dakota, Rosebud. They helped us build sweat lodge. The general public and one for women in particular. So we have that here too now.
we gotta put that together, Maika. So we will talk after the show. But right now we're gonna be joined back by the attorney author Greg Francis, who was disconnected.
Yes.
I've got him on the line.
Oh, great!
I got him back on the line, attorney Greg.
Yes, I'm here. Great to be back. Sorry, technical difficulties. I guess the router wasn't working.
Yeah,
I was at home, so.
Yeah, you're giving too much good information. You know, that happens when you tell the truth.
Well,
ain't nothing like an old phone call. That's how we do it. Yeah, we're still doing the after show on your show, still talking about it. For those who may have just joined us, Greg Francis, the eternal attorney. The attorney who won $1.25 billion for black farmers. He is fighting for our right to live because we can't live without food. Well, that's what we've been told, but we know there's a breatharian on the other side of the world.
So we can live through oxygen that has all our nutrients.
Yes.
But until then, we got to eat food.
Yes, until then. And before you were cut off, Greg, you were in the middle of a sentence. We didn't hear a word you said, so if you want to continue with that thought.
I'm trying to remember where I was now, Zelda, to be honest with you.
We were talking about the black farmers and how it went from a million black farmers to 40,000 farmers.
So, I mean, look, this was a decimation by America of some of the best entrepreneurs and the most successful entrepreneurs, black farmers, just based upon the color of their skin. The farmers are who, these black farmers who are either who were slaves that were freed or the descendants of those slaves had the knowledge and had the wherewithal to go out there and do the hard work that was necessary to make sure that America had its proper position in the world. And, you know, we became the leading producer of cotton in the world. Based upon the black farmers and the slaves for that matter. So it has been an atrocious decimation of black farmers between the discrimination they faced and then the stigma that is put upon farming has just discouraged those in the current generations from getting into farming.
Yeah. That's what it's done. And, I'm listening to a lot of young people now as they hear us talking about, going and learning how to work the land. There really is a curiosity and a fascination with it. And I believe we can turn that tide because they haven't been poisoned against the idea of farming so much as maybe their great parents or grandparents who came here fleeing that way of life because for them it meant powerlessness and, oppression and, racism. But these young people now, they're really interested in learning what they didn't know. And they have scientific minds. Matter of fact, I guess it was a few weeks ago, we had a young woman entrepreneur who, using natural ingredients, makes this skin cream. And it's just because, she wanted to figure out how to get rid of her acne and all of that. And she came up with a formula, and I'm telling you, I bought the cream. I got to give her a name because I remember. Because I've been using the cream, and I'm telling you, she figured out whatever natural substance helps replenish the cells in your skin and rejuvenates your skin. My skin is flawless. Oh. And this is a 17-year-old. And
wow.
She just figured out the ingredients and put it together, packaged it. She's in business. And I'm telling you, since I've been using her skin cream, people come up to me, just total strangers. They will look at me and say, oh, you're so beautiful. And I'm thinking, really? Oh, my God. But, you know,
right.
This is the kind of minds that we have among our young people. We just need to expose them. There is so
right.
much to learn about what's growing in that ground. And everything that comes out of the ground is no accident. Maika was just talking about the minerals that grow out of the ground. When I was in the process of doing this class and learning about all the different plants, I learned that clover, which grows everywhere, people are going to go, ah, get that weed. I learned that clover actually replenishes the nitrogen in the soil, which gets depleted when we're constantly growing grass mm-hmm. and lawns and everything, trying to look nice, but we can't eat it. But it depletes the soil of nitrogen. So Mother Earth just naturally will grow a lot of clover in the areas that need more nitrogen. And then we discovered that clover has a lot of medicinal properties for us, clover tea, a lot of things that help to repair damages in our bodies and all of that. So we have everything right there in the soil. And I believe we hook these young people up to the ground and give them the experience of growing things and let them experience and experiment with things, they'll discover a whole lot of cures for things that we think are incurable.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's going to happen.
Right. Right.
Both.
You know, right here in Orlando, there was a program that was instituted a couple years ago where they brought many of the inner city kids and got them involved in, you know, tending to bees and harvesting the honey.
Yes.
And they learned how to not only harvest the, you know, the honey, but also to take it to market and what the true value of that honey is from health purposes. And it was helpful in many ways. One, in terms of farming and teaching, you know, young people about the benefits of farming, but it was also entrepreneurial. Look, you know, you don't have to be on the street corner and selling, you know, something that's going to put you in prison for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
No, here's another business. Here's another way to make money. And it was very wildly successful here. I think they ended up on the Steve Harvey Morning Show, as a matter of fact.
Oh, wow.
That's great. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is the key to our entrepreneurship. There's so many things that can be sold that are health-producing. Yeah, sister's name is Cassia Alderson, and her product is Feminine Divine Essentials.
She was on my show.
She was on your show.
Yeah,
you know, got me looking 10 years younger with her skin cream.
Well,
and she just figured out what natural ingredients to put in.
17 years old.
Yes.
I'm 65 and I still don't know what to use.
get her stuff.
Baby, she brought me a basket and I'm using it all.
Yeah.
She has the oatmeal soak. She has, I got to grab this girl. I never heard of honey and black seed.
Yeah.
So when I get a craving for sugar, because those are the parasites they want to be fed to, I just
right.
dip my little finger in there or get a knife and just on the tip. Put some of that black seed and that honey on my tongue, and it takes the craving away.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
That is awesome. I've known about black seed oil for a very long time. I've known about honey, but I just never thought to put them together. And it just it also relaxes you, too. I was like, really? Black seed oil and honey?
Wow.
Oh, yeah. And then she has something called yoni.
Oh.
Close your ears, Greg. It's for
okay.
it's for women's private parts. I'll put it like that. But Greg, you got a mom and a sister, so they need to know
too. That's right. That's right.
They
That's
need
right.
to know too. She got all kind of products, and I can't remember what her website is, but it's on my blog, ZeldaSpeaks.wordpress.com.
Okay.
These young people are on fire. These young people are on fire.
They really are. And so, I mean, we just need to give them the exposure and they will create. And that's why we need to change our thoughts. Don't think about being angry at people for what they did. Think about what we can do to create what we need. And when we focus our energy on that, the ideas will come to us, the inspirations will come to us, and we'll find that everything we need is right there in the ground we've been walking on
right.
and not even realizing everything.
Right.
Greg, can you tell us how many of the farmers that you came in contact with, how many of them, or well, what percentage would you say of those who have the younger generation in their families, students, sons, daughters, nieces, and nephews, how many of them are considering farming?
You know, it's a very small percentage, and I think it's because of the miseducation of exactly – you know, what the status is of farmers in terms of lifestyle and that type of thing. So most of these, most of the younger generation are going on and doing different things because, you know, quite frankly, all the problems with the USDA are not fixed. As I mentioned earlier in the show, you know, 0.1% of all the billions of dollars of aid that went out during the Trump administration went to black farmers. So it's not over. It's a constant battle, and I think as a result, it has, you know, caused the next generation to go in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
But with this re-education and kind of, you know, shining the light on this issue, I think is going to. I'm hopeful that it is going to increase the desire and the the desire to get back into farming.
Mm. I certainly hope so, because, see, it's the young people who have the energy that
right.
it takes to do farming.
Right, when I got involved in the case, I started romanticizing, well, maybe, you know, I'm going to leave the city life and become a farmer. When I really realized what it takes to work on a farm, I'm on a farm, but I don't want to be a farmer. I don't know if I'm ready for that.
You want to dictate. You want to delegate. I'm sorry. You want to You want to delegate that work.
Right.
You can manage
it.
You can manage it, but you ain't looking to do the work. No.
Right, exactly.
Not at this age. You got too much knowledge where you can you can send somebody else to just harvest.
Right. You know, I spent some time with a farmer last who took a tract of land in downtown Orlando, Florida, not maybe two blocks away from the arena where the Magic plays, that was just a blighted block. He went in there and by hand, you know, he had to kind of clean up the property and whatnot. But now he has a thriving farm right there in downtown Orlando. And you know what? The community supports it. You know, there was a bunch of drug activity and that kind of thing in the area. And, you know, that is, I'm not going to say it's non-existent anymore, but it is greatly diminished. But nevertheless, whatever they may be doing outside, they don't bother that farm. They don't bother that farm at all. They respect that. And, you know, I think that is... you know, kind of the small seeds that you will see of us beginning to understand the importance of that.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's
good. I think that one of the things that we need to understand in the 21st year, the 21st century, is that we don't have to reduplicate what happened in the past. That's where what we were talking about earlier, cooperation comes in. As people come together and possess the land, then we can delegate different work for different people. So it doesn't have to be hard work. It just has to be work that we literally focus and create interest, like having gazebos and basketball courts for timeout and, you know, things like that. Lemonade for people who work in early morning, not working in the hot sun, but in the early morning hours. And the late evening hours. So when more people come together in cooperative and co-ops, then we take away the drudgery of farming. I remember as a farmer, I remember this young guy came to me and said, what do you do? I said, I'm a farmer. He said, oh, that's hard work. You in the sun all day long. I said, you be in the sun playing basketball all day. What's the
okay.
Deal?
Okay.
That's right.
Tell them, Maiga. I know that's right. Oh, that was clever. Only Maiga.
So we have to be creative. We have to be creative.
At the end of his day, all he can do is
just
lay down and sleep.
Okay.
Right. At the end of your tiredness.
Right, right, exactly. And as you said, you know, the more of us that are involved in it, as the proverb says, you know, many hands make light work. So
right.
The more we're together on this process, and I think that we can reverse some of the trends and bring back the dignity that comes with
yeah.
a, and farmers, especially our black farmers.
Amen. Say that. Wow. This has been a powerful show, and I want to thank you all for contributing to this very crucial discussion, because the discussion is the beginning of what will transpire in the future. So we got the young folks involved, we got the older generations involved, and when we come together, put these heads together, baby, there ain't nothing we can't do, especially since we know we got that third layer of skin that is crystallized.
Right.
Come on now.
Amen.
So, Greg, can you please give us your contact information and where people should go to get the book, learn more about the process and the scholarships and all the everything that you have up?
Sure. The book is on Amazon and Target.com. The foundation is JustHarvest.com. I think I'm saying that right. There may be a little change too, but I think that's right. JustHarvest.com. And that would still be in kind of built out at the current time. I'm in Orlando, Florida, but you know I handle cases and issues all over America. I don't limit myself simply to Florida. My office number is 407-655-3333, and my email is gfrancis, F-R-A-N-C-I-S, at realtoughlawyers.com.
Realtoughlawyers.com. All right, man. Gfrancis at realtoughlawyers.com. And what was that phone number again? 407-655-3333. And that is the voice of Attorney Greg Francis, who just won the largest settlement, class action suit settlement in the history of black farmers, $1.25 billion. And he's in Orlando, Florida, but you can call him too and see what he can do for you as well. So thank you so very much. G. Francis at realtoughlawyers.com. He does not take no for an answer.
Right.
So this is the lawyer
that
you want.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so very much. We've got a comment. Uh-oh, we got a comment here. Deborah Smith says, I've been converted.
All right. Get our gloves on. Let's dig in some dirt. We gonna
okay. I didn't see this one. Those who left the South decades ago made their children hate farming because they connected to being poor and uneducated. Yeah. How do we reverse those concepts? Well, I think we just explained all of that in the show today.
Yeah.
So please go back and look at that and share this information with all those who deserve to know the very best of what we as a people have to offer and what we continue to do to uplift the community. Thank you so very much, Attorney Greg Francis.
Well, thank you for having me. It was wonderful being here, and I look forward to coming back sometime when you think it's appropriate.
Yes, please, and keep us posted on your housing
okay.
Lawsuit as well, and we would love to have you back here on the show. Thank you so very much. We greatly appreciate that. And
thank you.
Thank you so much. And Naima
is
going to close out the show. Who's going to tell us who's on tomorrow and the rest of the week?
Well, of course, we got Tuesday. Tune in for Jody Susan with self self-care. As always, learning about energy healing and how we can revitalize our bodies and live to be 120 years old without aging. So listen in. And this Wednesday, we've got another dynamic young person on, a young lady who has an organization that's helping young people with critical thinking. They're using sports. They're using all kinds of activities to help generate the genius in our young people. So tune in for that with myself and our co-host Kareem Hamid. And then, of course, Thursday, we've got Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie. You don't want to miss that because she's really helping us overcome some of those deep-rooted fears so that we can empower ourselves to grow. And, of course, our dear sister Viata with Health and Well-Being on Friday. And this coming Saturday, we got Wisdom with Prophecy. And, of course, as always, we know you got your Global Team Talent competition where we get inspired by all of these worldwide young people with such amazing talent. So we're just so grateful. And, of course, you know, Sunday we start all over again with Soul Purpose Healing with Viata. And this is such an opportunity for us to raise global consciousness with this knowledge. We're changing the way people think so we can open their minds to create. And that's what's so exciting about our show every day. So be sure to join us. And if you missed the show, just go to the archives, www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. Listen in and share it with your friends and those you love.
And you'll be glad you did. And we'll be glad you did, too. So please be sure and subscribe to The Female Solution on blogtalkradio.com as well as The Female Solution on our Facebook page.
Absolutely.
And
like and share.
Like and share. And by all means, please go to our Facebook page, which is HLNTV1. And my page, Zelda Speaks. And like, share, and subscribe. And know that the information that you are sharing and subscribing to is crucial information for not only for us, for you, but the community at large, because we are a human. This is about humanity. This is not about a color. They got it twisted. That's not what this is about. This is about humanity. And we are all in this together. And I know I'm going to say it and somebody's going to disagree with me, but that's okay, too. This pandemic has been nothing but a blessing in disguise because it is making us open our eyes and see ourselves ways that we have never done this before, and it was time. It was long overdue. So I want to thank you for being a part of that.
Absolutely. And look out for the upcoming comic book series.
Yes! Corona Man!
Adventures of Corona Man.
The Adventures of Corona Man. As we leave you with the promo for the Female Solution, I would like for you to be sure and watch it so you'll know what is coming up and you will have a chance to see or hear exactly what it is that you want. So enjoy the video, and we are off and running. There it is.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Viata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time.